I've got blue eyes.
But you're not a devil. You're a sweetie.
Old Radio WIOO Carlisle and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to talk with Marcy Wheeler. Evidently, she, the president, was in Holland, Michigan today at a battery factory, and she was there to cover it. She writes under the name of Empty Wheel over at emptywheel.net. So it'll be interesting to talk about this because, look, he's pushing this free trade stuff again. And look, I'm in favor of creating jobs. I'm just not saying this is the way it's going to go. So we'll talk to her about that. In the second hour, Tim Sullivan, Associate Director of Development at United for a Fair Economy, he's going to be here talking about their contract for the American dream. The right wing, they love to have their contracts, don't they? The contract to destroy America, the pledge to America, the pledge to this, the pledge to that, the pledge. Well, you know what? The left, you know, the rational folks in the contract for the American dream. Maybe something for you and me. Maybe. We'll talk to Tim Sullivan about that. Also in the second hour, John Paul Smith, communications person over at United Steelworkers Local 7-669, going to be here talking about the Honeywell situation. Those guys have ratified their contract, going to be going back to work very soon after a long, long 13-month lockout. They didn't want it, but they fought it, and it looks like they've come to a victory point. So good for them. And we'll talk to him about that. And also Bob Lennox, Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 495. This is one of those stories where you go, you know what? If it weren't for these 68 people who work for this BMW parts distribution plant, if it weren't for their being a member of a union, having a collective bargaining agreement, having a collective of them all together, BMW would have been able to do whatever they wanted with them, which was to fire them all and replace them with a third-party logistics company who would come in and then hire people probably at half the wage, and probably none of them. Because, of course, the third-party logistics company is not going to want any union people to come in because they might, though, I don't know, organize a union. Because understand, when the third-party company comes in, they look at that union contract, and you know this is how it went. They looked at the union contract. They said, well, that's the wage you're paying. We're going to tax some money on top of that so that we can make a profit. So that when BMW fires those workers, then they bring in workers cheaper. There's even more profit for the company. That's how it is. And this is why I keep telling people, look, you know, at the end of the day, if the right in this country, if the ideological right wing in this country succeeds in destroying organized labor, we will be at the mercy of every petty dictator in this country who thinks that he has the ability to destroy our lives at the drop of a dime. So we'll do that. And we'll also take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I don't know if you saw this. In fact, fake news on Fox was all breathless.
This is a Fox News election alert. Drama on the campaign trail in advance of tonight's big debate, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here. We now have our hands on the tape of an altercation between Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney and what we are told is a group of liberal activists in Iowa.
Oh, did they abduct him? Did they beat him with flashlights? An altercation? There had to be bloodshed. There had to be fighting and smacking and... No, it was a question. In fact, it was a couple of questions, why don't we raise the cap on Social Security so that the rich people pay more instead of capping it at $106,000? Why don't we take it off so that everybody pays the same amount on every dime that they earn? Why don't we do that? That would solve Social Security's problem forever. That would be the end of it. We would have no more discussion about Social Security. And he, you know, you got to give him credit. He went back on his talking points. I don't want to raise taxes on anybody, especially people like me. but what's going to get him into a bunch of trouble is they said, you know, at the end of the day, folks, we need to raise taxes on corporations. And Romney came out with the gem.
Corporations are people, my friend. We can raise taxes on... Of course they are. Everything corporations earn ultimately goes to people.
I go back to this whole mentality.
Corporations are people, my friend.
You know, are they people? Do they have the same rights that you and I have? You know, I keep going back to this time and time again. Corporations are a legal construct. They're something that we as a nation, as a society have said, you know, can do some good. They're going to create some jobs. They're going to make products. They're there for us, not with us. And I got to be honest, this is going to bite him.
Corporations are people, my friend.
Because they're not. They don't breathe. They don't bleed. And they don't die. Now, I'm a big fan of saying, you know, I know the righties want to, they're just dying to amend the Constitution. And I say maybe we could use a constitutional amendment that says that corporations are not people. People are people. But when you listen to him say that, and again, you know, the fact of the matter is...
Corporations are people, my friend.
Is it any surprise that he's going to say that? I mean, really, is it any surprise considering that... Romney has taken more campaign cash from lobbyists than Snow White and all the seven dwarfs in the GOP field. Not only has he taken more than each one of them, he's taken more campaign cash from lobbyists than all of them combined. He has surely filled his pockets. They're saying almost 52% of all lobbyist money has gone to Romney. The rest of them, they've divvied up a little bit. The next closest would be Polente. And you go, yeah, does it make any... Makes perfect sense that he would take the position. Corporations are people. And there was very little talk. If you go and you listen to his little stump speech, and you could tell he was very uncomfortable. In fact, you know, the one guy said, I thought this was a listening tour. We want to speak to you. And he's, no, this is me speaking. Which was kind of great. It shows how out of touch he is. Shows how completely out of touch with reality he is. When these folks want to know how they're going to fix, he's, as president, is going to fix the very real problems that we face. And to me, I go back to this jobs issue. The very real problem is you have so many people out of work. And that's what those folks wanted to hear. Most of them were senior citizens on Social Security who hear the Republican Party saying, well, you know, we got to get rid of these entitlements because, you know, the entitlements are going to go through the roof. And he went through this whole long spiel about, well, you know, if we keep things the way they are, you're going to pay higher taxes. So what we need to do is, you know, he threw out a couple of, you know, minor things that, you know, a couple of things I agree with. Maybe, you know, looking at means testing a little bit. But at the end of it, the bottom line is the Republican talking point. Hate Obama, and don't raise taxes. That's it. You know, at the end of his little speech before he ran off, he said, well, if you want somebody who's going to raise taxes, you vote for Obama. And if I were in the crowd, I'd say, well, if you want somebody who's going to make sure that Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are still there in 4 years from now, I would say vote for Obama. Now, I'm not thrilled with him throwing it on the table to be discussed, but the Republicans have already told you they want to destroy it. And for me, it comes down to jobs. You know, if we had trade policies, and this is where I'm going to beat up on Obama today, too. If we had trade policies that encourage job growth here, we wouldn't be talking about Social Security. We wouldn't be talking about debt. We wouldn't be talking about immigration. In fact, we'd be going, how do we get more people to come in if we had all those jobs that we've lost? And, you know, I spent a little time today because the trade deficit numbers came out. And again, you know, you just kind of got to scratch your head when you look at for the month of June, for goods and services, our international trade deficit was over $53 billion, almost $27 billion of that with China alone. And you go around and you look at the fact that we have not had a trade surplus, not one time with China, with Japan, with Taiwan, nothing. Since 1985, which is the first year that they had numbers where I was looking at on the government website. Not one surplus in 26 years. And China being the most egregious. In 1985, and I was shocked by this, in 1985, we had a trade deficit with China of $6 million. Can you believe that? $6 million trade deficit. You fast forward 26 years, or 25 years. Last year, $273 billion trade deficit. This year, we're on track to beat that. $134 billion already, and the Christmas rush is about ready to begin. So as you look at this, how can you have an economy where you're buying so much from overseas? You know, I went and I looked at countries in Europe, you know, where with the UK, for instance, where we actually had a trade surplus. In fact, this entire year, we've had a trade surplus with the UK. Those are the people you have agreements with, and we're close. We've exported about $27.5 billion worth of stuff. They've and imported almost $25 billion worth of stuff. We're close. And you look at the trade situation with the Chinese, they have sent us over $182 billion worth of stuff, and we've only been able to send them $49 billion. We're talking massive gulf between import and export. Now, if you're going to have a trade deal with somebody, it's got to be semi in the ballpark. Some years you're going to have surplus, some years you're going to have deficit. That's okay. If you're running small deficits, I can get that. But look at China. Look at South Korea. Look at all these other countries. We've been running long-term structural deficits. South Korea, and mark my word, when we sign this trade agreement, and we're going to, it's going to happen, this $6 billion deficit we have right now, so first half of the year, $6 billion deficit, I guarantee you in 10 years that's going to triple. And we're going to lose more jobs. And the $3 billion trade deficit we have with Colombia, I guarantee you that's going to triple in 10 years. And the surplus that we have with Panama, kiss that goodbye. And you stop and you look at this stuff and you go, at some point, where are the smart people who are negotiating this stuff? They've got the data that I've got. They've got the exact same numbers. Yet we're still going to go down the path and pursue the insane trade agreements that have gotten us into this mess, the NAFTAs that got us into this mess. And I told you, Mexico, we had a trade surplus with the year before NAFTA went into effect. And we have had a deficit every year since. And NAFTA hasn't only killed American workers. NAFTA's killed Mexican workers as well. These trade agreements aren't about the workers. And this is where I think cross-nationally, and we're going to talk with John Paul Smith about this a little bit later as well, how do we reach out across the borders? How do we reach out to different countries and have workers come together, labor come together, as capital has done? Because these trade agreements are, how do they put more money in the hands of Wall Street? How do they put more money in the hands of the investors? And when we come back, we're going to talk about the trade schemes with Marcy Wheeler. She was in Holland, Michigan today at the Johnson Control Battery Plant. Can't wait to talk to her. We're right back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO is acting this month with 450 events around the country demanding that politicians act urgently to help create jobs. With dark economic clouds gathering once again, a tumultuous stock market horror ride, and many millions of Americans still out of work, the AFL-CIO is calling on President Obama to come up with a jobs program adequate in scale to deal with the jobs crisis. Labor all along has insisted that not nearly enough is being done by government to stimulate jobs creation. The AFL-CIO's board recently met with Obama on jobs. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the debt deal will cost 1.8 million jobs, and he says it's time that Obama launched a jobs initiative big enough to really matter rather than settling for what Republicans will accept. Public employees are the subjects of a new public service announcement campaign to build public support. Jesse Russell reports.
The National Treasury Employees Union has launched a new campaign that seeks to improve the image of public sector workers. The union, which represents more than 150,000 employees in 30 government agencies, is seeking to counter the rise of harmful attacks on federal and other public sector employees. In addition to radio and television PSAs, the union has launched a website that notes the many ways employees in the public sector work for everyday citizens. For example, the website, theyworkforus.org, asks people to think about who provides the safety when they drink water, eat a meal, visit a doctor, travel abroad, and deposit paychecks. The following is a PSA the union produced called Who Can We Turn To?, which seeks to show federal employees through the eyes of Americans.
Who can we turn to?
To watch over our food supply.
To safeguard our bank deposits.
To protect our water and the air we breathe.
Who can we turn to?
To monitor drugs for safety.
To defend our borders. Federal employees provide vital services to defend our national security, support our economy, and improve our health. Federal employees, they work for us.
Go to theyworkforus.org.
The Secretary Treasurer of the San Diego Imperial County's AFL-CIO says that she won't be intimidated by thugs who threw a heavy rock through her living room picture window. The attack came right after a right-wing blogger, who is also the secretary of the San Diego Republican Party, posted a verbal attack on Lorena Gonzalez. Gonzalez says that the blogger had warned her for months that she was being watched. Gonzalez says the attempt to intimidate her instead inspires her to do even more for workers. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hard-working men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
I will oppose the Columbia Free Trade Agreement. I want Congress to pass a set of trade deals. Send a message to Congress to come to an agreement on trade deals.
They're selling make-believe, and we don't buy that here. 'Cause in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down, while the boss man takes his bonus pay, jets on out of town. D.C.'s bailing out the bankers as a farmer's auction. While they're living it up on Wall Street in that New York City town, here in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download our podcast, or if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take your class war on the go. So earlier today, the president spoke from a new battery manufacturing plant in Holland, Michigan, a place that seems, you know, fairly popular with the politicos. I've seen a number of stories from there. And, in fact, I think this is the president's second trip to the Johnson Control plant there. The jobs created was, you know, it was popular. You know, people said, yeah, we want to create jobs. But, you know, as he's talking, same neoliberal trade schemes being pushed out again and again. And as, you know, he's talking about this, they're saying, yeah, we want jobs. And then he puts the, well, listen to this. It's kind of interesting.
Send a message to Congress to come to an agreement on trade deals that will level the playing field and open markets to our businesses so we can sell more goods to countries around the world. Yeah, we've got a lot of Americans driving Kias and Hyundais. I want folks in Korea driving Fords and Chevys and Chryslers. I'd like to see that. I want to see billions of dollars more products sold around the world, stamped with three words, made in America. Made in America. Those trade bills are teed up. They're ready to go. Let's get it done.
And silence. Can you hear the crickets chirping? Because everyone knows these free treats, these trade schemes ain't working for us. That's why my next guest spent a little time there at the plant in Holland, Michigan, listening to the president speak. Marcy Wheeler, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So the president gave the big speech, and as you heard, was it the cricket sounds that it sounded like in the audio when he brought up the trade schemes?
Yeah, and then, I mean, I don't even know that you can really tell from the tape, but the first applause line was really tepid. I was actually surprised. As I was sitting there, I was like, you know, maybe he's not going to be an idiot, and he's just not going to raise the fact that he's doing what people in Michigan hate more than anything, which is send jobs overseas. But he went there. I mean, to his credit, he's consistent at least. He didn't, interestingly enough, say anything about displaced workers, which is what he's been saying recently, which I think is just a testament to the fact that he thinks there's not even going to be trade adjustment assistance passed with these things. He's just going to go ahead and pass, you know, send our jobs to Korea anyway. And then the other really interesting thing about it, you know, he said, oh, I want people in Korea to drive Chevys. Notice he didn't mention Panama or, more importantly, Colombia.
Right.
Because there's already a GM factory in Colombia.
Right. And, well, you know, the thing is when he said that, he wants, and in fact, I've got the clip right here.
Yeah, we've got a lot of Americans driving Kias and Hyundais. I want folks in Korea driving Fords and Chevys and Chryslers.
And, you know, I listen to that. I go, yeah, I'm okay with that, too. But, you know, why aren't we talking about Americans driving Fords and Chevys and Chryslers instead talking about trade deals that are going to level the field so that those companies don't have the advantage that they get from governments that subsidize them, as we've seen in the past 30 years?
Well, and the other really nutty thing about this is, you know, what's going to happen if the Korean trade deal passes is – we are going to export Volts and the Ford Transit vans there for a few years. But then the same thing that happens all the time that when we import into Asia is going to happen again, which is they're going to build a factory. GM is going to build a Volt factory. You know, Ford is going to build a Transit factory. Because why would you ship heavy batteries from Michigan to Korea? It adds $200 a car. Rather than build them in Korea, where the technology is anyway,
excellent point.
Korea will steal the technology, and then GM will be exporting Volts from Korea to the rest of the world. I mean, I almost guarantee you that is exactly what Korea has in mind with this trade deal, is to import our new electric vehicles for a couple of years and then steal the technology. And then the battery plant that Obama was boasting about today, you know, sure, they'll still provide batteries to people in the United States, but that's going to limit how many batteries we export because we're already setting up Korea as a competitor.
And not just Obama, but also Hoekstra there and Rick Snyder there, the Republicans in Michigan, who have been doing the same thing, touting how these factories are creating jobs, even though they don't want to talk about the, as you point out, the government investment that it depended upon.
Yeah, I mean, I am surprised. I mean, I guess I'm not surprised he brought up the trade deals because he feels like he needs to say he's doing something about jobs. But hey, this is the Midwest. There's nothing that pulls worse in the Midwest than saying you're going to pass a trade deal to ship more jobs overseas. And you know, it was a heavily, heavily vetted crowd there today. It was mostly like high level Democrats and some people from the plant. So they did quietly applaud as he began to pitch this, but look, I mean, he is not going to win the states in the Midwest. He needs to win for reelection, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, if he keeps going on this trade deal thing, because we all know better.
Absolutely. We've seen this movie and we know how it ends.
I mean, we know better than anybody that those jobs, you know, that this is about sending more jobs to Korea.
And in your piece, you know, over at emptywheel.net, and we've got a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com, in your piece, you make the perfect point. The world is already driving Fords and Chevys. The only problem is they're made in places like Brazil and Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, Korea is the only one of the three countries where we might have new importation. Maybe, and I, you know, again, I think it's just going to be the electric vehicles. It's not going to be, you know, a Chevy Cruze. But more importantly, I mean, Korea is going to exist as a way to launder because of the way that the materials, you know, you can, I forget whether it's 40% or 60% that doesn't need to be made in Korea.
35% domestic content, 35%. Which, you know,
so it's just going to be a way to launder Chinese and Thai constructed vehicles through Korea using their cheap labor.
Right. What about North Korea?
You know, they'll be importing them here.
What about North Korea? I mean, you know, one of the things that I've been hearing is, you know, what happens if, you know, the South Koreans decide they want to partner up with the North Koreans, build a plant just on the other side of the border? You know, what about that?
Yeah, and right, prison labor, basically. You know, and as we will be doing if the Colombian free trade deal passes, we're basically, you know, we're asking Americans to compete with people who, you know, are risking death to speak up at all. That's what we'd be looking at there. And it just doesn't add up. And I hope that like I said, he has changed. I've been watching his rhetoric on this very closely, and he's changed at least for delivering it in Michigan. And then next week, of course, he's going to Minnesota and Illinois and Iowa, although not to manufacturing areas of those states. And I'll be curious to see whether he reverts to this claim. Because, I mean, last week he was making a claim that these jobs that we're going to get by shipping jobs to Korea will replace those from displaced workers who lost their jobs when NAFTA passed, right? You know, it doesn't make any sense.
But, you know, again, he's feeling pressure from the Wall Street crowd that this is what they want. And understand, and what I've been talking about for the longest time is these trade agreements are not about people like you and me. These trade agreements are for Wall Street. These trade agreements are for big agribusiness. That's what it's about. And if you look at what NAFTA did, you look at all of our agreements. That's it. It was about for the financial sector. It was about big agriculture. That's it. It wasn't
right,
about
and
automobiles.
This one's even worse because, you know, the Goldman and J.P. Morgan, I mean, between Panama... Okay, we're gonna sign a trade deal with a money laundering state so that more companies can avoid taxation in this country. That sounds like a stupid idea. And then we're also going to let JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs do to Korea what they've done to the United States, which is just loot wildly. And that's the whole point of these things.
Yeah, have you gotten any sense of how the Korean workers are feeling about this? I mean, everybody I talk to, I've yet to find many people who are I've yet to find anybody enthusiastic about these trade agreements. I found a bunch of people who are viscerally anti these trade agreements. But have you done any talking to people who, you know, maybe in Korea and Colombia and Panama, how the workers there are feeling on this?
I haven't. I mean, I haven't heard a lot about that. I think in Korea, as you said, this isn't even going to help Korean laborers all that much because the wages in Korea are relatively high. It's going to help Thai workers. I mean, because there's the ASEAN trade deal that ASEAN has with Korea. And I know, you know, Ford's been trying to get a trade deal with Thailand passed for years because they make cheap Rangers there. And so they want to, you know, import their Rangers from Thailand rather than making them here in the States. They'll just bring them through Korea now. You know, you're going to see a lot of that going on.
You know, because at the end of all of this, you stop and go, you look at what happened with NAFTA. And you ask the question, the United States lost hundreds of thousands, if not millions of jobs, because of NAFTA. Are the workers in Mexico doing any better? And everything that I see and the people that I've talked to, the workers in Mexico are actually worse off than they were before NAFTA.
Well, particularly when you add in the ag, you know, that they had to start competing with big American agriculture.
Now, which completely destroyed their farming communities. And again, that's what caused this huge wave of immigration. And I keep saying, if we had sane, rational trade policies, where we dealt with people on a, you know, where we had a relatively stable trading pattern, where our deficits and our surpluses were in the same ballpark, we wouldn't be talking about deficits in this country. We wouldn't be talking about debt. We wouldn't be talking about immigration. In fact, we'd be talking about how to bring people to this country to fill the jobs that we had. But instead, we keep following this policy of shipping jobs overseas in hopes of getting cheap products.
Yeah, and in this case, you know, it's sort of like, I mean, the other really frustrating thing about Obama's appearance today was he barely mentioned the fact that these jobs are there because the government invested. You know, he kind of said, well, we did this, we worked together to get this done. But the last time he came to Holland to brag about these factories, he was like, well, we gave this grant and this money and it created these many jobs down the road. And it's like he won't even make the case that the government has a stake, has a role in creating jobs, and instead, you know, he had this ridiculous line in there. He said, the reason a plant like this exists is because we are a country of unmatched freedom, where groundbreaking ideas flourish. I mean, it's like Milton Friedman took over the president, and now freedom is the primary thing that creates jobs, not government investment, not laws, not, you know.
See, but here's my problem, you know, and look, I'll when Obama's wrong, I'll bash him like anybody else, and on this, he's wrong. But I'm looking down the road and I'm looking at the people that would replace him, and they are so much worse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yeah. We wouldn't even be having these discussions. And, you know, you're talking about another stupid idea. You look at this stupid Congress they've got, the super duper Congress they've got, where they've got 12 people who I think the vast majority of them are free traders. And are going to support more of these bizarre free trade schemes. And most of them are anti-tax people. So all of the things that would help our economy, the people who are in our super Congress, are dead set against.
Right. Well, six of them are millionaires, at least, 6 to 8 of them. I was tracking. I was like, wouldn't it be nice if they had a rule that said no millionaires on the super Congress?
You got to wonder if they've ever done an honest day's work. Speaking of which, did you get to shake the president's hand?
Oh, no. No.
See, I got to shake his hand once. I got to shake his hands once, and he has the softest hands of any person I've ever touched, or anything I've ever touched. Which tells me again, he's, you know, one of those folks, and I'm sure all the people in the Super Congress are the same way. I just never get to shake their hands because they've never actually done an honest day's work.
Yeah.
Just my little bit of bashing.
Yeah.
But Marcy Wheeler, I appreciate the time again. EmptyWheel.net is the website. We've got a link at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Always great talking to you, and thank you for telling us what happened today.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show.
2-year-olds often go running around the house too wildly and crash into something. They get an ouchie and fall down crying, but they learn from it. That's the virtue of ouchie that Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and other big financiers got last year when they ran into the law after racing wildly through home foreclosure paperwork. They were caught falsifying thousands of documents and taking illegal shortcuts that were causing innocent families to lose their homes. They had to pay fines, make restitution, suspend foreclosures, and pledge to clean up their act. But at least they learned their lesson. Oh, wait, these aren't 2-year-olds. They are wily bankers. And the only lesson they ever seem to learn is that shortcuts can be profitable, as long as you don't get caught. But, once again, they've been caught rushing through foreclosures using the same old scam called robo-signing. To foreclose on someone's home, an authorized bank employee must sign the foreclosure document, swearing that the facts in it are true. But that requires hiring people to review each case. To avoid that cost, they take an illegal shortcut by signing the name of someone who has not read the document and might not even exist. In one Massachusetts county, for example, Linda Green's signature has recently appeared on some 1,300 foreclosures. Curiously, her signature was written in many different styles, and she had many different titles. Also, there's no Linda Green presently working in the mortgage banking company involved. Meanwhile, state officials say that robo-signing is, once again, an epidemic all across the country. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's a federal crime to do this, yet no bank or banker has even been charged. We've got to get serious. Until we put a CEO in jail, the banking barons will never learn their lesson.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
Corporations are people, my friend.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Also, if you want to email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com, I do answer all emails personally. And yes, yes, Mitt, I heard you.
Corporations are people, my friend.
Yes, corporations are people. People that are not people, though. And we're not going to treat people like people. You know, the other night we talked to Tim Collette. I don't know if you remember that. And his kid just returned from Iraq. Just got off the plane. In time to see the family foreclosed on. I mean, you know, again, you know, you talk about people. Talk about corporations being people. And maybe, you know, there's part of me that thinks maybe the study we talked about the other night where, you know, the more money you have, the wealthier you are, the higher up on the elite status that you are, the more you look down on the little people and have no sympathy or empathy for them. And I can see that to a degree. The more that you have, the more that you think that you're entitled to, that you've somehow worked for, the less you think other people are deserving. And the further away from hunger, the further away from the basic needs, the higher up on Maslow's hierarchy of need you go, the more maybe you look down on those below you as less worthy, as somehow just beneath you. The further away from missing a meal, the further away from not having to worry about being homeless or feeding your kids or putting clothes on their back. Maybe I get it. And, you know, this study that they did at the University of California, Berkeley, and they've done 12 separate studies that have pretty much laid it out. And look, you and I, we didn't need them to do these studies to know that the wealth class doesn't care about their working people. They don't care about the wait staff. We didn't need studies for this. We already knew it. When you look at someone like Paris Hilton, do you think she really cares about any of the little people that work in her hotels? No. So was it any surprise that someone would then look at Mr. Collette and his family and, you know, a big corporation? Because after all,
corporations are people, my friend.
So when they look down on a little person like Mr. Collette, who put $125,000 of his own money down on the house, had a business that he was working, putting in cabinets and tile, the economy went south, the business went broke, and now he's screwed. Everything he's worked for being ripped away from him. His son goes off to fight for the country, and on the day he returns, they steal the house from him. Is that the country that we want to live in? And I look at this other woman. Her name's Mardi Girde. She got into an accident, had a car accident. 11 months. Couldn't work. She fell behind on the mortgage, did what they told her to do, went through all of the stuff. Went through every step to try and save the house while she was working through her injuries from the accident. So she gets a settlement from the insurance company, almost $50,000. And lo and behold, the mortgage company says, well, if you want to stay in your house, you got to come up with $50,000 immediately. Immediately, right now, or you're going to lose your house. This second. Chase said, you know what? We're not going to take your application for loan reduction. Not going to do it. So if you want to keep your house, you're going to need 50 grand. So she sends it off. Now, they're saying they're going to foreclose on her anyway. And she has got to find a way to pay off the outstanding balance of the mortgage over $200,000 by August 23rd, or they're going to kick her to the street. And you look at the companies like J.P. Morgan Chase, this one, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, who aren't getting any more federal money. Because, you know, the president had this plan, making home affordable program. No more money because they failed to meet the basic program requirements. They weren't doing anything to help these people. And I got to be honest, the more I look at this, the more I just kind of say, do we need corporations? Because, you've got a major presidential candidate.
Corporations are people, my friend.
Who honestly believes that J.P. Morgan Chase has the same rights as Mr. Collette and his family, has the same rights as this woman who was hurt in a car accident. Do you believe that? Do you believe that corporations have the same rights that you have? Because I would argue if you do, you don't have enough money to make sure that your rights are protected. They do, however. And they live forever. And I looked at the one railroad company, borrowed $250 million for 100 years. How do I get $250 million for 100 years? Can you get that? Of course you can't. And they got it virtually interest free. I don't know any people who can do that. In fact, I don't know any people that a bank would give a 100-year loan to. Because people die. Corporations don't. And I go back to this thing that this study. Corporation doesn't care about these families, don't care about any of that. They care about the bottom line and profit. And that's it. Nothing else. And what does it say about us? That we're not outraged by both of these stories and the millions others just like it, Jake. I mean, when you have these scenarios of the big bad corporation kicking these people to the curb, I don't know what else to say.
And if the system is skewed against people like this, and Congress isn't going to do anything about this outrageous corporate power, the only thing that people have left is to make a stand. Maybe that's what they have to do. Maybe they have to just refuse to leave and get the community involved.
Show me the bill.
Embarrass the you-know-what out of these
Show
banks.
Show me the note.
Make someone pay a terrible political price. Maybe that's the only alternative. People get organized. People care. Start taking action. Somewhere, somehow, we're going to have to stop this. And apparently, at least as of now, we're not getting a lot of help from Congress.
When we spoke to Mr. Collette the other night, he said, look, I don't want a free house. That's not what this is about. I want to pay my mortgage. I just want to have the opportunity to get through this rough time. And what I've been saying, and I believe this is absolutely the truth, And his example bears it out 100% in my mind. He put $125,000 cash down. $125,000 down. He paid on that mortgage for 5 years. The first 5 years, anybody who's ever had a mortgage knows, the first 5 years, that's when the interest is the heaviest. That's when you pay, make a $1,000 payment, probably 800 of it is interest. They're getting their money back. Now, they took $125,000, he paid all that interest up front. Now, they're going to take his house from him. So they got $125,000, they got all that interest, so they're okay. Now they've got the asset back. And they can go do it to the next guy who's going to have to put money down, who's going to have to pay 5 more years of interest. Then you know what they'll do? The same thing the banks always do. Hey, you should refinance so you could pay those 5 years over again. And then, oh, you should refinance again so you could pay those 5 years over again. It's amazing what we've allowed to happen. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You got a question, comment, something on your mind that's ticking you off like it does me? We're right back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated, professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Gasoline, groceries, and our haters. Everything's raisin, but the weight is.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, the podcast is there for your entertainment and enjoyment. If you got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app. You can take us with you on the go. And, of course, if you got a question, comment, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. So Jeff Merkley, Democrat from Oregon, senator there, and 22 other Democratic senators, sent a letter to Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, asking him to support job creation measures as part of the super committee's work. He says, quote, "Let us be clear, our fiscal challenge is directly linked to the jobs crisis, and we cannot solve the former without tackling the latter." And, you know, the reality is he's right. And this is what I've been saying for the longest time. Had we all those jobs that we shipped overseas for cheap products or the illusion of cheap products, had we had those here, had we had those furniture-making jobs down in North Carolina that we used to have before we shipped them overseas, had we had all those manufacturing jobs in my hometown of Cleveland that we shipped overseas, we wouldn't be talking about deficits and debt. We wouldn't be talking about immigration policy. In fact, maybe we'd be talking about it in the reverse. How do we bring more people? How do we get more smart people here to do the jobs that need to be done? And how do we figure out how to spend all this money to educate our people instead of the reverse, which is what's going on. And, you know, I think Merkley's right. You got to start talking about how we create jobs, because it can't be, it just cannot be a series of cut, gut, and burn. It just can't be cut, gut, and punish. It just can't happen. You've got to figure out how to, one, create jobs, but two, get people paying their fair share. Now, the Republicans, they've come up with a jobs plan, a very business-friendly jobs plan, and we've talked about it before. Their jobs plan is we give all the money to corporations and rich people, and then we get on our knees and we pray. You know, we pray that maybe they'll be decent and they'll be sympathetic and they'll empathize and they'll create jobs out of the goodness of their heart. Not going to happen, but that's the part of their plan. The other part is, well, we need to deregulate. So cut taxes, deregulation, and that's what they're moving on. They're pushing this thing called the RAINS Act, which, you know, again, the whole idea of it is to destroy regulation. They say that they want to do away with all major regulations that they don't think pass their cost-benefit analysis. I'm not sure exactly what that means. If they have to spend a penny on it, it isn't worth it. So I'm expecting at some point, if this passes, that I'm going to have to get a knife to cut out some air for me to breathe, and I'll have to, you know, drink water that looks like sludge. Because that's what they're going to take us back to. You know, I grew up in Cleveland, home of the Clean Air and Water Act, especially the water side of it. You know, when I was a kid, suffered from asthma horribly because the air was polluted. Because we didn't have people watching over. And that's what they want to take us back to. They want to shut down the EPA because, well, as Michelle Bachmann says, it's the job-killing organization of America. And mark my words, they are going to shut the government down over this. I think it's going to come this fall. I think they're going to make the stand that, you know, it's outdated. We spend too much. We shouldn't be regulating. We're too heavy-handed because we want children to breathe clean air, and we want to, drink clean water, and we want the food not to be rancid. Gee, you know that really hard stuff. You know, those onerous regulations. How dare you want clean air and water? And on last Monday, the Chamber of Commerce, they jumped into the mix. They kicked off their regulatory roadshow in Wisconsin because they want to roll back the regulations. You know, they rolled out the big money. They got Bush staffer Andy Card, and they got a Republican Representative Ribble to go along. And, you know, regulations are just killing us. We need deregulation. Have you heard anything other than that for the last 30 years? That's all I seem to be getting out of Republicans. Cut taxes and deregulate. Going to create jobs. Mm-hmm. Hasn't happened. Now, the Democrats, Jan Schakowsky in particular, you know, much like the Congressional Progressive Caucus put out their people's budget, well, one of the members of that Congressional Progressive Caucus, Jan Schakowsky, she's put out the really the people's job bill. And, you know, she puts the people, human people. I guess now in the post-Romney era.
Corporations are people, my friend.
I guess now in the post-Romney era, I've got to be more explicit. Human people first. Put humans first. Her plan aims to put 2 million human people back to work almost immediately. And the stuff that she wants to do, smart stuff. Her bill is called the Emergency Jobs to Restore the American Dream Act. It's going to cost about $227 billion over the next 2 years, and it would be there. It would be completely funded by her Fairness in Taxation Act that she put out a couple of months back, if you remember. Now, the Fairness in Taxation Act, does what I've been saying she would do all along, raise taxes on millionaires and billionaires. Because they've proven to us. They've proven that they're unwilling. They've proven that they're unable. And they just don't care to create jobs. They're sitting on trillions of dollars. They're sitting on mountains of cash. Honestly, trillions of dollars of our blood, sweat, and sacrifice that we created. And they're sitting on that because, well, they can. And the reality is these profits that they're sitting on, they're just as much ours as they are as it is theirs. So here's the thing. She's going to create 2.2 million new jobs. And what they're saying, it's going to decrease the unemployment rolls by about 1.3%. And I think her plan is spot on. You hire some construction workers. And we got a lot of rebuilding to do in this country. And the first thing she says, you know what? We can hire about 650,000 construction workers, maintenance employees to rehabilitate our schools. Instead of building new ones, let's go in and fix the old ones. We can hire people to do that. And she says, you know, we can create about 100,000 jobs for young people, you know, clean up the parks and take care of our park system, set up this park improvement corps. She also wants to set up a student job corps to create about 250,000 part-time jobs for kids, you know, to have a little work study so they can work their way through school so they don't come out up to double their size in debt. They've got a whole bunch of other ideas. The Neighborhood Heroes Corps, she wants to hire about 300,000 new teachers and about 40,000 new policemen, new fire people, you know, to take care of the community. And then, you know, it goes down from there. You know, you need to have, you know, people who are going to watch folks, kids who are going out to work, people who are cleaning up the community, going. Look, there are a number of senior citizens where my grandmother lives, my grandmother being one of them, who, you know what, they could use their windows caulked. You know what? They could use their bathroom painted or the roof redone, but they just don't have the ability or the money to do it. There is so much that we could be doing, and those aren't even the big infrastructure projects that we need to get done. There's so much to do, Jake, and so much idle labor. I say we put people back to work but I've been saying this for years now, a WPA-type thing, not only for infrastructure, but also for communities.
And if we can't get that passed the Congress, and right now it doesn't look like we can, perhaps there's some progressive governors out there that would have the vision and the opportunity.
Tom Corbett's going to do that.
No, I didn't necessarily mean here. I mean, there could be some states with that, you know, the right situation. I mean, somehow we're going to have to create jobs, and in creating jobs, not just make work. There are some very worthwhile jobs and responsibilities that we have left undone, some of them literally for decades. I'm talking about our basic infrastructure. I just saw an article in the paper, local paper, Rick, where they're going to repair some water lines that are over 108 years old. And that's fairly typical.
And you think about that. I mean, you know, every time you hear a water main break or a bridge collapse like the one in Minneapolis, you go, how long are the bridges that I'm driving over? How long are they for this world? When was the last time we saw bridges replaced? When was the last time we saw our infrastructure improved? There's so much opportunity out there. Yet what we've got is we've got a Congress hell-bent on tax cuts. And I look at the Super 12. I would say 7-8 of them are of the tax slashing variety. You know what Baucus is. And I'm still flipping over the fact that they appointed Max Baucus. It's another example to me of where, you know, why I'm not one of the, you know, the diehard Democratic supporters. You know, I believe in the Democratic principles. But when you got people who constantly, like this guy, who's sticking you in the backside, you got to do something about it. I don't even think he's going to win re-election. Last poll I saw, I thought he had like a 17-20% approval rating, something ridiculously low like that.
Well, I guess the question then becomes, why did they appoint him?
Well, I have no idea. I just, if I'm Harry Reid, I have no idea.
My guess would be Harry and him have a quid pro quo going.
What was that again?
A quid pro quo.
There you go.
Meaning they're going to scratch each other's back.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Tim Sullivan, Associate Director of Development at United for a Fair Economy. Right back after this.
Processing virtual little town hall.
family. Radio for the rest of us. Rick Smith. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO is acting this month with 450 events around the country demanding that politicians act urgently to help create jobs. With dark economic clouds gathering once again, a tumultuous stock market horror ride, and many millions of Americans still out of work, the AFL-CIO is calling on President Obama to come up with a jobs program adequate in scale to deal with the jobs crisis. Labor all along has insisted that not nearly enough is being done by government to stimulate jobs creation. The AFL-CIO's board recently met with Obama on jobs. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the debt deal will cost 1.8 million jobs, and he says it's time that Obama launched a jobs initiative big enough to really matter rather than settling for what Republicans will accept. Public employees are the subjects of a new public service announcement campaign to build public support, Jesse Russell reports.
The National Treasury Employees Union has launched a new campaign that seeks to improve the image of public sector workers. The union, which represents more than 150,000 employees in 30 government agencies, is seeking to counter the rise of harmful attacks on federal and other public sector employees. In addition to radio and television PSAs, the union has launched a website that notes the many ways employees in the public sector work for everyday citizens. For example, the website, theyworkforus.org, asks people to think about who provides the safety when they drink water, eat a meal, visit a doctor, travel abroad, and deposit paychecks. The following is a PSA the union produced called Who Can We Turn To?, which seeks to show federal employees through the eyes of Americans.
Who can we turn to?
To watch over our food supply.
To safeguard our bank deposits.
To protect our water and the air we breathe.
Who can we turn to?
To monitor drugs for safety.
To defend our borders. Federal employees provide vital services to defend our national security, support our economy, and improve our health. Federal employees, they work for us.
Go to theyworkforus.org.
The Secretary Treasurer of the San Diego Imperial County's AFL-CIO says that she won't be intimidated by thugs who threw a heavy rock through her living room picture window. The attack came right after a right-wing blogger, who is also the secretary of the San Diego Republican Party, posted a verbal attack on Lorena Gonzalez. Gonzalez says that the blogger had warned her for months that she was being watched. Gonzalez says the attempt to intimidate her instead inspires her to do even more for workers. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hard-working men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
To the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So today, back in the year of 1884, we saw U.S. federal troops drive some 1,200 jobless workers from Washington, D.C. The unemployed activist Charles Hobo Kelly led the 1,200 men who were chased out of Washington. In that activist group of unemployed included the young journalist Jack London, who's famous, he's famously quoted in the Scab piece, and also young miner Big Bill Haywood. An interesting thing. And, you know, you look at this, this fight for fairness, this fight for opportunity, for equality, it never ends. Right now, we just seem to be fighting another chapter in the never-ending struggle of working people and the working class experience, just another one. And I'm waiting for the Charles Kellys of today, the Coakleys of today, to march on Washington, set up their tents, and you know, demand that something be done. But there are things being done, and that's why I've asked Tim Sullivan, Associate Director of the of Development at the United for a Fair Economy. He's here to talk about their new contract for the American Dream. Tim, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh,
Thank you for having me.
You know, I look at this, and finally, we've got a contract that we can talk about. The Republicans, have, you know, they've had their contract to destroy America and their pledge and, well, their whole litany of pledges. But finally, something I can get behind.
There you go. That's the idea, something that unifies a lot of progressive ideas and brings together a bunch of policies under a one united banner.
And, you know, in looking at this, I walked through all of them, and, you know, investing in infrastructure to me seems like a no-brainer, not something that we would have to write down on a piece of paper to say this is what we want to do. It should be something we should just be doing.
Right. It shouldn't be this way. It's that's the first point in the contract is investing in infrastructure, and that's actually something that has immediate short-term benefits of putting people to work and enormous long-term benefits for obviously rebuilding our infrastructure. Also, interestingly, it's not just favored by progressives. Even the Chamber of Commerce is behind the idea of let's spend some money on our infrastructure and build the things that will make us a prosperous country for years to come.
And to be honest, you know, in looking through this, there's nothing that I disagree with. Offering people health care, getting education, creating jobs, making sure that I have some retirement security, making sure that the tax rates we pay are fair, you know, getting the heck out of the sandbox in the Middle East. A whole bunch of that stuff just seems common sense to me.
Well, that's exactly right. It's a common sense document. It's very straightforward. The way that it was put together was to have hundreds of thousands of people voting on the best ideas, and the top 10 are what made it. From, like you said, investing in infrastructure to strengthening democracy and end to corporate personhood. And they're really straightforward ideas, and all of the bold points in it are underlined with real policy options that have either been introduced or proposed in Congress. It's a matter of building a constituency to push for it and to not let go and not cave in to the Tea Party idea of, you know, cut government at all costs all the time, no matter what, and never ever raise taxes.
You know, for me, the one thing that's been missing in the entire this whole charade over the debt and the debt ceiling has been our trade deals. In fact, we're going to be, I just talked to someone a little bit ago talking about pushing more of these insane job-killing trade deals that I think are just horrible and for everybody, but we seem to have to go through this. Had we the millions of jobs that we've lost over the years because of these trade schemes, I don't think we'd be talking about debt. I don't think we'd be talking about immigration. I think we'd be talking about how do we spend all this surplus and how do we bring more people into the country to take the jobs that we have available?
Well, the trade deals certainly have been a contributing factor, and you're exactly right that the biggest problem that we have is not enough jobs. People are out of work, and as a result, they're obviously suffering and not spending money, and that has a ripple effect that goes throughout the entire economy. And the trade deals that they're proposing, the beneficiaries, generally speaking, are the people who are wealthy, the corporations that are doing business. We have money flowing freely across borders, but we don't have people flowing freely, and as a result, you've got massive imbalances.
Absolutely. If you want to take a look at the contract here, faireconomy.org is the website to go to, or you can just go to the ricksmithshow.com and click on Tim Sullivan's name. It'll take you right there. You listed number 10 as strengthening democracy, which, you know, seems kind of vague. But when you get into the meat of what you're talking about, I think number 10 should be number 1, because I don't think anything else is possible without having transparency in our election process, transparency in who's buying whose vote. And you point to the Koch brothers, you point to the big hedge fund managers, these big lobbyists who are spending millions and millions of dollars on buying candidates. I think that has to be first and foremost in the post Citizens United era that we live in.
Right. Well, we need to stop living in a post Citizens United era. We need to put an end to corporate personhood is really what needs to happen, and that's what Citizens United is based on, the idea that corporations are people, which is mandated by law, and the idea that speech is money, which means that the corporations with the most money can have the most speech. in a post-Citizens United world. We really need to turn that back.
But what's scary is we've got a contender in the Republican Party who's running for president who believes...
Corporations are people, my friend.
What else can you say?
Well, that's he is in fact right. Under the law, corporations are people. That's the nature of what allows there to be a legal basis for Citizens United, and that's wrong. It's plainly obvious that corporations aren't people. Fortunately, at this point, we don't let corporations vote, but we're letting them decide elections for us now.
Right. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Tim Sullivan, Associate Director of Development at United for a Fair Economy. FairEconomy.org is their website. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Tim's name; it'll send you right to the contract. And I think this is a great thing. What kind of response have you been getting?
Well, it was just released on actually yesterday on the 10th. So it's actually been, there's been a lot of interest in it, a lot of excitement. You're mentioning our website. We've had a lot of traffic coming in the last couple of days. So people are fairly enthusiastic about it. There's a fair amount of excitement. The key to it really is to use it as a tool for organizing, and what we need people to do is to be calling your legislators, calling your representatives, calling your senators, calling the administration. They need to hear from people, and that's part of what has led to the Tea Party having such a strong voice, is that they've been extremely vocal. So we need to amp up the volume a bit. Call your congressman every day. Let them know that this is unacceptable. We have a genuine crisis on our hands with the economy. We need not to be doing ridiculous things like cutting trillions of dollars of spending during a recession. We need to be adding to what we're doing. If we want to balance the budget, we need to tax more, especially from the richest and from corporations.
That's one of the things you put on your list, fairer tax rates. And I agree, and I think Jan Schakowsky's bill is a good step in the right direction, her fair taxation bill, in conjunction with this emergency jobs bill that she's put forward. And I think she's trying to do a lot of the things that you have in this this contract for the American dream.
Oh, she's been doing a phenomenal job. There's some good people down there in Washington. It's just that they get drowned out too much by the conservative drumbeat. The proposal that she released this week is a good one. It's appropriate for the economy that we're in to directly put people to work doing things that need to be done. In that bill, I think she had a lot of emphasis on infrastructure and green energy jobs and on education, and that's exactly what we need to be investing in. And on the tax portion of the contract, that was actually drafted by my colleague at United for a Fair Economy, Lee Ferris, and that's where we've been working on that for years on the tax side. Lee in particular focusing on preserving the estate tax, which obviously is only paid by millionaires. And we need to add taxes on the upper income, the millionaires and billionaires in particular. So the Schakowsky bill does all of that, and there's a few other bills that would make a huge difference, adding revenue so that we don't have to be forced with, what are we going to cut next?
I'm there. I look at this and this is a great piece of organizing. I think the contract for the American dream, you can take a look at it over at faireconomy.org. We've got a link at our site at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on Tim Sullivan's name. Tim, I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work there, and we'd love to have you back again as this moves down the road.
Well, thanks for having me, Rick.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I love the work. Hate the rules. We're faster than you would believe. We had layoffs again this morning. I got my children now and I can see. Parents are angry, how can I blame them? They end up blaming me. When did I become a drama? How did folk become all mine? The governor says, tighten their belt. The only one that's tightening is mine.
park job, because I love working out there.
Fellow working class heroes, I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Two-year-olds often go running around the house too wildly and crash into something. They get an ouchie and fall down crying. But they learn from it. That's the virtue of ouchie that Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and other big financiers got last year when they ran into the law after racing wildly through home foreclosure paperwork. They were caught falsifying thousands of documents and taking illegal shortcuts that were causing innocent families to lose their homes. They had to pay fines, make restitution, suspend foreclosures, and pledge to clean up their act. But at least they learned their lesson. Oh, wait, these aren't two-year-olds. They are wily bankers. And the only lesson they ever seem to learn is that shortcuts can be profitable, as long as you don't get caught. But, once again, they've been caught rushing through foreclosures, using the same old scam called robo-signing. To foreclose on someone's home, an authorized bank employee must sign the foreclosure document, swearing that the facts in it are true. But that requires hiring people to review each case. To avoid that cost, they take an illegal shortcut by signing the name of someone who has not read the document and might not even exist. In one Massachusetts county, for example, Linda Green's signature has recently appeared on some 1,300 foreclosures. Curiously, her signature was written in many different styles, and she had many different titles. Also, there's no Linda Green presently working in the mortgage banking company involved. Meanwhile, state officials say that robo-signing is, once again, an epidemic all across the country. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's a federal crime to do this, yet no bank or banker has even been charged. We've got to get serious. Until we put a CEO in jail, the banking barons will never learn their lesson.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
I'm breaking the rocks in the hot sun. I fought the law and the law won. I fought the law and the law won.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you've got something on your mind, question, comment, something burning, just burning a hole, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So all the polls we keep seeing. And this seems to be the polling week for I Hate Government. It's one of these moments where, you know, I then flash to the Bush clip of him standing under the Mission Accomplished banner, because this is the Republican wet dream. This is what they have been working for 50 years to accomplish. A moment where they can turn around and have people say, my government isn't working anymore, and it's broken, and we need to have an overhaul. And I keep seeing people sending me stuff of how wonderful, you know, the email I talked about yesterday, you know, the one with between Walmart and morons, and Walmart's wonderful and the government's bad. Walmart's wonderful and the government's bad. And I just wrote back, I go, are we talking about fascism? Because that's what you're saying. If Walmart's so great, and the government's so broken, that's what you're talking about. So you see the Washington Post poll that just came out. 21% of the people saying they're satisfied with the way the country's political system's working. 21%. Down. And the whole idea is then, you know, you got this system where the Republicans who have done this, they've done a great job, and the Democrats have helped. They're not gonna walk away unscathed either. But you've got this system now where they can point to it and say, see, it's broken. We need to do something else. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Stosh on line one. How are we doing tonight, Stosh?
Pretty good, Rick. How you doing today?
I'm complaining. This whole idea that we have broken government run by broken people who don't believe in what they're doing is not surprising.
I'm telling you. the last speaker had a good contract idea, but the main thing these Republicans are doing is doing everything they can do against Obama. Everything he tries to put forward, they're crushing. And they just want to flush America down the tubes just to get back at Obama. So, another thing. Where's the IRS? What are they doing? All these rich people not paying taxes? What's wrong with them?
Well, at the end of the day, what's happened is, and look, they've got such highly skilled lawyers, they've got such good lobbyists who put out such great loopholes that they just abuse the system. You know, it's that simple. They've negotiated themselves with their hired lobbyists, the ability to get some loopholes and to be able to avoid paying taxes. And you're right. I mean, right from the very beginning, the Republicans were saying they wanted Obama to fail. In fact, Rush Limbaugh himself said it pretty convincingly. If I could play the clip.
Mm-hmm. If you could send us 400 words.
No, I guess not. this is a little glitch in our computer. But, he said, look, it came right out. I want him to fail. I want Obama to fail.
And they haven't created any jobs but the main job of making Obama fail. And people act like they don't understand what they're doing. I mean, it's a shame. People don't want to admit that these Republicans are out of control. The corporate Republicans, they don't care about you, me. Only thing they're concerned about is how much they can steal. What's the backing of the IRS? That's what bothers me.
And what we're hearing now is we're hearing the same drumbeat we heard back in the 80s when they said, well, what we need to do is we need to lower the rates and close the loopholes. We'll lower the rates so that people will then pay taxes, and we'll get rid of those loopholes and we'll lower the rates. And so what they're going to do this time, like they did the last time, because remember the last time they did this, they pulled the tax reform bill of 86. They did away with a bunch of loopholes, and they did. They did away with the loophole for eustache to deduct any of the interest on car loans or credit cards that you paid. So that loophole for you is gone. They taxed your unemployment benefits. So there's a slap in the face. And they did take away some of the corporate loopholes, but starting the very next day after it was passed, they went back to lobbying to get them back, and this is what's happened. So now, not only did they lower the rate, they got back their loopholes. So we're talking about doing the exact same thing at a lower point. So again, you and I are going to get screwed in this because they're going to take away the mortgage deduction or something else, and we're going to lose again. The corporations will lose for a short period of time, but they're going to lobby it back. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we are, brother.
Okay.
I appreciate the call.
All right, Nick.
And again, this is coming. I'm telling you, mark my words, put it on the calendar. Because we've seen this movie before. And you know what the ending is. But here's the thing. You go back to this idea that, people are upset with government. And Jake, people are. And you can see it. What happened with this whole debt ceiling debacle angers and frustrates and ticks me off. And I say, yes, we've got people who don't understand governing in charge of running our government. They are people who hate our government. And they'll do everything they can to just destroy it. And then are we surprised when it doesn't work?
Well, the danger of that is that they'll vote all the incumbents out. Not all incumbents deserve to be voted out and start over. Are we going to have that again, a complete change? I would hope not. There's some people who, when they run for office, deliberately try to make it as dirty as possible to turn people off. And I think part of the endeavor on the right is to anger so many people and turn them off that they actually tune out of the system and don't vote, which is a possibility. I hope it doesn't. I hope the other reaction comes that people are angry and they're willing to get out there and vote in massive numbers, which is exactly what they want, what we need. And if that happens in this country, there's no question, Rick, I think Obama can win, and I think the progressives can do very well if the people vote, and that's the key. How are people going to react? Are they going to, like they did in the 60s, tune out and step out of society? Are they going to step up and finally realize that for democracy to work, they have to participate?
And you know what's interesting to me? You look at the, and I think that the folks, I think people are getting it. The Washington Post did a poll that showed that 71% of people say that what's going on in Congress, what's going on in Washington, they're focusing on the wrong thing. 71%. We should be focusing on jobs. That debt ceiling thing should have flowed through without a whisper. We didn't want to spook the markets, which we knew was going to happen. We need to be creating jobs. And surprisingly, only 10% of the people polled said that congressional Republicans have made progress towards solving our problems. 10%. Now, also part of the poll, and again, one of these things that you go, I'm kind of amazed at, with all of this anger and this angst and this finger pointing, the poll question number 17, please read like this. Please tell me whether you agree or disagree with the following statement. Whatever its faults, the United States still has the best system of government in the world. Agree or disagree? 77% agreed. 77% agreed that we have the best system of government in the world. Even though they're saying, you know, by massive numbers, that it's broken.
I think structurally we have a good system. However, it's been taken over by vested interest and money far too much, and I think more and more people understand that. Here's the problem. There's another problem right here. Everybody agrees jobs, jobs, jobs. And what does the president do? I said last night, and I think a lot of people are getting to the conclusion that the president has to be out in front and say, this is my program. But when you go out there and tout free trade, which I think the majority of Americans realize is not a good thing, and he goes out there and touts free trade as part of his job creation policy, that's not good.
Not working for me. But what you're hearing now in response to this broken government frame, again, you know, you get the term limit people, you know, throwing out there, we need a constitutional amendment, we need a Congressional Reform Act, we need all this stuff so we can have term limits, and we can make sure that we don't give pensions to them and they have no tenure and none of this stuff. So basically undo everything that government has been for the last 100 years. And you know, look, there are people who buy into this term limit idea. Personally, I'm not one of them. And I disagree with the whole premise of term limits for a number of reasons. One being, we've already got term limits. It's called the ballot box. If your guy is not doing the job, you vote the bums out. And there are a lot of bums right now who need to go. But number two, I think experience counts for something. I think educated people who believe in what they're doing counts for something. And what we're seeing right now, what's going on right now, is we've got a ton of ideologues hell-bent on destroying government. You know, they've got just a touch of power right now. And they're going, well, now we've got we're gonna take it to its knees, and we're going to deregulate, and we're going to make government ineffective. What we need to be doing right now, you got all these people saying we need constitutional amendments for this, and we need constitutional amendments for that, balanced budget amendments. We need all the, even though they love the Constitution, we need to keep changing it according to them. If you really want to change the Constitution and you really want to do something positive, we need to eliminate...
Corporations are people, my friend.
We need to eliminate corporate personhood. You know... Are you hell-bent on passing a constitutional amendment? There's one right there. And it would read something along the lines of, we, the living, breathing human people of flesh and blood, define a person as a living, breathing human being of flesh and blood and a beating heart and a functional brain. Not a legal construct or an accumulation of capital. No, an actual flesh and blood, a real boy, not a wooden one. You know, just like Pinocchio, a real boy. If you really want to get to the root of our political problems, why not pursue another constitutional amendment? After we declare that people are actually flesh and blood human beings, why not, you know, pass the other constitutional amendment that shines the cleansing light of transparency on who's funding these political operatives and who's funding these campaigns? You know, give me publicly funded elections. Maybe some cost-free media time. After all, aren't the airwaves ours? And by all means, shorten these election cycles so the people that we put into office can actually do the work that we pay them to do without every day having to be on the phone begging for money. And this way, to be honest, I can get a break from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. We're over a year out, and they're hounding and bashing the president. Personally, you know, look, what's amazing to me, the people who hate government the most are the people who want to use government to be the most restrictive. I prefer term limits to be in the hands of me, a living, breathing, flesh person, not the government. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
An innocent bystander. Somehow I got stuck. Between a rock and a hard place. And I'm down on my lap.
1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So, you know, this whole super committee thing, where you've got Rob Portman, who's one of the guys, and I don't understand him being part of this at all, given his given his background as OMB director under the Bush administration, who was the guy who oversaw the tripling of our debt, of our deficit. I just don't know that he's the guy, given the fact that he was, you know, part of the trade, the trade people who gave away a lot of jobs. But here again, he's saying, well, you know, if any tax increase is going to hurt our fragile economy, and I'm saying depends on who you're taxing. If you create jobs, and this is where smart policy comes in, and I know that our Republican friends don't believe in smart policy, but smart policy would be, you know what? You big corporations who are laying people off and you're getting record profit, we're going to tax those record profits. So you might as well invest that money into creating new jobs. And we'll give you tax breaks when you do create those jobs. But we don't seem to think that way in the congressional circles. Now, he did say that he might be in, they're kind of taking this, that he might be willing to raise revenue by getting rid of some of the tax preferences. And when I read that, I go, what does that mean? Your mortgage deduction? Are we going to be stealing more from the working class? Which, again, the most reason people can afford their houses is that deduction. And he says we need to get rid of some other things that don't make sense. What is that? Like the child credits? Earned income tax credits? Is that what you're talking about? Because I'm sure you're not talking about the subsidies for oil companies. Sure you're not talking about the deductions that, you know, the millionaires and billionaires take with their yachts. I'm sure you're not talking about that. But again, going back to what I was talking about with Stosh, and he's talking about this. He's going to be one of the guys leading another tax reform bill of 86. So expect it to come, the tax reform bill of 2012. Going to lower the corporate rate, going to lower the millionaire and billionaire rate, going to lower that top marginal rate down there for a very short period of time. Going to take some loopholes, some deductions. I'm going to take those away. You and I are going to lose some things too. We will never get those back, mind you. And then the lobbyists will start the very next day at getting them back for their people. And we will end up in a situation where the rates are lower and lower and lower, and you and I, we pay more and more of the freight.
Well, you know, the more you look at the makeup, especially on the Republican side, boy, I'll tell you what, this doesn't look like a good idea. Senator Toomey, I mean, Club for Growth, come on, the Koch brothers, fund these people. He didn't vote for the bill. He didn't vote for the bill in the Senate. You know why? Because it didn't have enough givebacks. Didn't have enough givebacks from the programs which we cherish. So where do you think he's going to come down in these negotiations? I mean, Senator McConnell warned us. He said, we're going to put people on here that are going to do what we want them to do. And boy, has he ever.
It's scary, scary stuff. And, I mean, you go through and you look at some of the stuff that they're trying to push through. This idea, you know, that Toomey said from the very beginning. If he were in charge, it would have been a much harder down. They would have let the economy sink further and further. And you brought up the vote against the debt ceiling, raising the debt ceiling. Look, the reason we're in the downgrading situation that we're in is, look, you've got a broken system there with these recalcitrant Republicans who are saying, you know what, we're not doing it. And the S&P people said, look, the reason we downgraded you is new revenues have dropped down on the menu of policy options. It's not there. You can't raise any new revenue, which means if you can't raise new revenue, that means you can't pay your bills because cutting is not going to happen. It also said the act contains no measures to raise taxes or otherwise enhance revenues. Nothing. This whole thing that they're talking about is all about our ability to bring more money into the coffers and pay our bills. They're very clear about that. But, you know, the mainstream corporate-controlled media, all they keep talking about is, well, you know, the downgrade happened, and, well, you know, whose fault is it? Well, we know whose fault it is. They've come right out and said it. It's the Republicans' fault. They refuse at all costs to raise revenue. And I know. You're talking about raising taxes, Rick. Yes, I am. But if you're going to say that, ask me on who. You know, the guy from Verizon, the petty dictator that's the CEO of Verizon, over the last 4 years has taken $81 million. Yet he wants the people that work for him to lose $20,000 a year. Why? So he and his cronies can share more. This is a company that's wildly profitable. And this whole canard that, oh, well, you know, we're losing the hardwire business. Yes, you're losing the old phone line and switching over to the new technology. But again, the corporate-controlled for-profit media, not talking about that. This is a very profitable company. Like most of the big corporations who are stealing wages from their workers. They're very profitable. But it's about, like the guy from J.P. Morgan Chase said, it's about stealing from the people who are working and filling the coffers of the people at the top. And I ask, you know, how much longer can we do this? And all I get out of the Republicans is, we want more tax cuts, deregulation, privatization. That's all we seem to get out of them. They're a broken record. And today, you know, you want to talk about privatization run amok? How many people remember the cash for kids thing that went on up near Scranton? How many remember the two judges on trial?
I believe he just got sentenced.
28 years in prison today.
Not enough, but we'll settle for 28.
He's ordered to make restitution almost $1 million.
Should spend the rest of his life in prison.
And, you know, a whole lot more. But
I
here's
hope
the thing.
He does.
But here's the thing. We have a governor right here. And I talked about this the other night. We have a governor who said, you know what? My commission, my gubernatorial commission to study privatization, he says, I could see prisons and health care and running the state parks privatized, along with the state wine and spirit shops. On the chopping block. So when you start talking about privatizing prisons, privatizing all of your health care, privatizing your state parks, what you run into is situations like this, where people figure out how to line their pockets. And that's what this was about. And nobody's going to convince me, and he was found not guilty of it, but you're not going to convince me that the $1 million that he took in kickbacks and bribes and all that had nothing to do with the really harsh sentences he was handing out. Because they need those for-profit prisons needed the beds filled. And you know what that is? That's fleecing you and me, the taxpayer. Yeah, that's the part of this that I don't think many people talked about. How much money did you and I end up forking out to put kids in jail who didn't belong there so that these for-profit prisons, these kiddie prisons, could profit and pay their shareholders? Didn't hear much about that, but now we got a governor. Governor saying, hey, I could see us. We should do that with the other prisons too. I'm telling you, scary times ahead. And this governor, you know, what's it going to mean for our state parks? You know, my family likes to go to the state park every now and again. Am I going to have to pay admission to the state park every time I go? Are they going to charge me $10 to park my car? Oh, sorry, nature walks, $3.95. You know, he says, well, you know, the state parks don't have lifeguards. Well, why don't they have lifeguards, Tom? You're the guy with the budget. You're the guy who allocates the funding. If state parks are that important to we the people, and I think they are, we should be funding that. But I know we don't want the wealthy people to have to pay for the entertainment for us, we the rabble, you know, because it's only the rabble, us, we, those dirty working people who go to those state parks. You know, we don't see the investor class, marching around on the trails or going to the swimming pool up at Little Buffalo. No, we don't see that. It's just the rabble. So we can make them pay their admission fee so that the wealth class doesn't have to. It's a shame, Jake. It's an absolute shame.
Well, I think when you're talking about prisons, you talk about privatizing you're getting into a shady area there. Sometimes our sense of justice is skewed by the profit motive. And inevitably, that will happen.
Well, who do you think pushed for all those three strikes and you're out and all those tougher sentencing requirements? The for-profit prison industry. Why? Duh. Product. I got my bed full for the next 20 years. This guy is that's a cash cow. And you're going to privatize health care even more? So that the guy who has a tumor, let's hold off on that until it's cancerous. You know, in Krugman's book, The Conscience of a Liberal, I read a couple years back, he had an interesting statistic. 95% of all amputations because of diabetes was paid for by the federal government. 95%
Medicare.
And you go, why is that? Why is it that 95% is paid for by the federal government through Medicare? Well, because the for-profit insurance companies, well, they made testing supplies a little more expensive because, you know, we need to have you have a stake in the game, of course. They made the medicine a little expensive because, you know, after all, you need to have some skin in the game. Not that your wages kept up. We made visits a little more expensive because, you know, after all, you know, we want you to be to use health care responsibly. Not use it when you need it and you're sick, but, you know, when you can afford it. So what you end up doing is you end up having an industry who keeps pushing it, pushing it, pushing it down the road. So when you finally do get sick, guess what happens? Guess what happens when you finally get to the end stage of diabetes? Well, you can't work anymore because your employer doesn't want you, kicks you to the curb. And guess what happens either that day or a couple months later? You lose your health insurance. And then what happens? Well, you're on the back of the taxpayer. You're on Medicare. And now you've got a system that is taking care of someone that shouldn't have had to have because the for-profit private industry pushed that down the road. 95% of all amputations due to diabetes paid for by Medicare because we have a system that encourages these companies to push off care, to keep pushing it off, stretching it out so that eventually the problem gets worse and they don't have to deal with it because they're just going to push it off on somebody else. Is that any way to run health care? But again, he's talking about we should privatize it. We need more private health care. And private health care is great if you can afford it. And again, we live in a country where if you don't have health security, if you don't have health insurance and you don't have the ability to get it, chances are you're going to get sick and you will die. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, there it is right there for your entertainment. Also, for those with the smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app at our website and take the class war on the go with you. Just to kind of finish up the whole private prison thing. What's interesting, numbers from the ACLU, state and federal government spending, they're spending about $70 billion a year on prisons and corrections. And the amount of spending has gone up 674% in the last 25 years. That has everything to do with the privatization motive. That has everything to do with the profitization. That has everything to do with the lobbyists pushing for longer sentencing. And, you know, this fear of the public. We need to keep these dangerous criminals behind bar. Yes, that kid who had, you know, half an ounce of pot. Yes, he needs to be behind bars because he's a violent drug offender. No, he's just a kid with some pot. You know, at the end of the day, we've got to wake up and become adults about the drug trade. Maybe we legalize it. Maybe we tax it. Maybe you regulate it. Maybe this way you stop people from killing each other over it. Maybe this way you stop the draw from other countries. Just a thought.
Well, I always joked, and it was tongue-in-cheek, but it was serious. You know, if big business ever finds a way that they can make a big buck off selling marijuana, it'll become legal.
Well,
if
they can figure out a way of selling oxygen for you to survive, they're going to do it.
If I could make a comment on the prison situation, I don't think the average person understands how much money we spend in this country.
I just told
prisons.
You, $70 billion
a year. Well, we know the numbers, but the average person, I don't think in perspective. And I guess my point is, you know, if they're not going to do it, this should be something at least in Congress, maybe even in the big picture when we get into these cost cutting discussions, which we're going to have as a nation. Maybe we need to address that issue and look at it realistically, not only from an economic standpoint, but from a practical moral standpoint. I think our priorities right now are skewed, and I think we need to revisit that issue.
So evidently on Saturday, the same day that the state of Iowa is going to have their straw poll, it appears that Rick Perry is going to announce his run for presidency, and I've been saying for a while he's the guy. In fact, at lunch this afternoon, we were going, well, you know, when he wins the Republican nomination, who's he going to tap? And I'm going Perry Santorum. It's not Palin Santorum. It's going to be Perry Santorum. Because Perry's got some problems with Catholics. And who better than Mr. Catholic himself, Rick Santorum, to be his lackey? And you know Santorum would jump at the chance. I mean, that's the reason he's in this, so that he could be number two. And after all, you know, according to the guy, he is a number two mixture, if you read the definition of Santorum on Google. But that's, and I suggest you can Google Santorum and you figure out what that is. But Perry, a little more news, you know, the good religious guy that he is. Now remember, these are the folks who follow the Ten Commandments. And I remember when I interviewed, the good pastor James David Manning, and he refused to tell me what the Ten Commandments are, even though he wants them plastered all over the place. And I find that interesting. You know, the people who want the Ten Commandments plastered everywhere, they're generally the people who don't know them. And that's worrisome to me. I want people, you know, if you're going to believe in them, at least understand them. You know, I don't want you to be able to recite them verbatim right out of the book. I don't want you to have photographic memory. I want you to understand what they are. A couple words each. Simple. The good pastor couldn't do that. But, you know, Rick Perry being the good Christian, I found it interesting that he has presided over more state-sponsored murders than any governor in the history of the country. Yesterday, he oversaw his 235th execution. In fact, he buried George Bush. The little shrub only oversaw 152, so way beyond that. In fact, what's interesting, Perry has so bought into the capital punishment thing, he's only granted clemency in 30% of the cases, which from what I understand is really unheard of. I mean, Bush did twice that from what I understand. And I don't think Bush was Mr. Compassion.
Well, maybe the man likes the Old Testament a little bit more than the New Testament, where there's no forgiveness. Apparently. By the way, do you know who came out the best in a poll with Obama against Obama? I was actually shocked. Rudy Giuliani, believe it or not.
And did Rudy pay for the poll?
I don't know, but I had to sit down on that one. I mean, he hasn't announced, and I hope he doesn't. I mean,
was
he
it
ran,
a reputable
he
poll?
Ran, yes, and he ran a horrible, absolutely horrible campaign the last time he ran.
Are you sure it was a reputable poll? It wasn't something
well,
like...
Well, my idea
like,
of a...
It wasn't something like Joe's!
I don't know. My idea of a reputable poll, maybe a little bit different than yours.
Jeez, oh, man. If you're going to scream, you might as well just hit the volume button and go there, man.
Okay. I forgot the button.
There you go. But, you know, what poll was it, do you know?
Absolutely. No, actually, I don't, but it was announced on national TV. I mean, I'm assuming that it's a fairly reputable poll, one would think.
So
I can find out for you if you really need to.
I'm just curious, because I'm just curious if Rudy paid for it by himself.
Because no,
sometimes
mean,
you
guys, you're joking, but
no,
I
I'm not. So what happens is people they go out and they pay for polls. They have a particular poll question in a certain way that would put them in charge, and then that's what they leak that out. Nobody's talking about Rudy. I don't know where that comes from. So that's all I asked. That's the only reason I asked.
You do make the point that why does it appear now? Why is his name floated out? I mean, maybe he's really trying to maybe shoot for number two. That's a possibility. I don't think he has a prayer of winning it.
No. But again, you know, what this is the same thing I was talking about Santorum. Santorum knows he doesn't stand a snowball's chance of becoming president. He's working for at least to be, you know, the number two mixture that he is, or... you know, maybe a cabinet position, maybe the Secretary of Defense. That would get his little willy all.
That would
make his tingly parts all happy.
That's scary too. Good Lord.
Well, I mean, if Damien Thorne is going to be president, if Damien's president, then maybe Rick Santorum, Secretary of Defense.
Let's hope that the worst scenario never happens, but just by chance. The governor of Texas becomes the next president. Can you imagine his cabinet?
Yes, I can. It would be filled full of those crazy pastor people. And this music would play everywhere he went. This will follow him everywhere.
I guess my question is, Reverend Hagee, where would he slot him in? That's the big question on the minds of our listeners.
Yeah, you look at him. He would be in the Department of Labor. He'd be the one overseeing child labor.
Well, never mind. I was gonna make a reference to his weight, but I'll be nice today.
Oh, Health and Human Services? Is that where you're going?
There you
is that
go.
Where you're going? Okay. See, I can't.
He's gonna tell us how to eat healthy.
Okay, there, Slim. Let me know how that works.
Yeah, but have you seen Reverend Hagee lately?
I have not. I really try to stay away.
That's from a big man.
You know, I listen to those people sometimes, and they scare me. And the reason that they scare me is that there are people who follow them and follow their every word. That's extremely
worrisome.
And
he has one of those mega churches.
And, you know, you look at those big mega churches, and, you know, like the big response last weekend, they came out and they did their whole prayer thing. It's not political, of course not. They're passing the hat. He's the guy.
If you look at Reverend Hagee and some of the things that he has said a couple of years ago, I mean, this guy's scary.
Which is why Hagee's the reason that I picked Santorum, because Hagee's vehemently anti-Catholic. And, you know, with Perry out there kind of pushing him out to the front, you're going to need someone to attract the Catholics. I think Perry, that's going to be a downfall for him, because he's going to have a problem with Catholics. And this could turn into what I've been calling for the longest time. If Perry becomes president, then they declare us a Christian nation. Then you get to see the fun start, where all the different sects start eating each other. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Bob Lennox, Teamsters Local 495, Secretary Treasurer. We're right back after this. It's the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Center of the working class majority. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO is acting this month with 450 events around the country demanding that politicians act urgently to help create jobs. With dark economic clouds gathering once again, a tumultuous stock market horror ride, and many millions of Americans still out of work, the AFL-CIO is calling on President Obama to come up with a jobs program adequate in scale to deal with the jobs crisis. Labor all along has insisted that not nearly enough is being done by government to stimulate jobs creation. The AFL-CIO's board recently met with Obama on jobs. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the debt deal will cost 1.8 million jobs, and he says it's time that Obama launched a jobs initiative big enough to really matter rather than settling for what Republicans will accept. Public employees are the subjects of a new public service announcement campaign to build public support, Jesse Russell reports.
The National Treasury Employees Union has launched a new campaign that seeks to improve the image of public sector workers. The union, which represents more than 150,000 employees in 30 government agencies, is seeking to counter the rise of harmful attacks on federal and other public sector employees. In addition to radio and television PSAs, the union has launched a website that notes the many ways employees in the public sector work for everyday citizens. For example, the website, theyworkforus.org, asks people to think about who provides the safety when they drink water, eat a meal, visit a doctor, travel abroad, and deposit paychecks. The following is a PSA the union produced called Who Can We Turn To?, which seeks to show federal employees through the eyes of Americans.
Who can we turn to?
To watch over our food supply.
To safeguard our bank deposits.
To protect our water and the air we breathe.
Who can we turn to?
To monitor drugs for safety.
To defend our borders. Federal employees provide vital services to defend our national security, support our economy, and improve our health. Federal employees, they work for us.
Go to theyworkforus.org.
The Secretary Treasurer of the San Diego Imperial County's AFL-CIO says that she won't be intimidated by thugs who threw a heavy rock through her living room picture window. The attack came right after a right-wing blogger, who is also the secretary of the San Diego Republican Party, posted a verbal attack on Lorena Gonzalez. Gonzalez says that the blogger had warned her for months that she was being watched. Gonzalez says the attempt to intimidate her instead inspires her to do even more for workers. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hard-working men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
We need to stand united, for undivided we shall never fall. Remember all, we need to trust in and then forever call on our brothers and our sisters. And are you and I aware? You and I both know that we can rely on it. The time is prime, plans are lining, no mistake. For union resurrection, the anger has awakened. Has awakened the sleeping giant.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there. Or if you have the smartphone, the Stitcher app, you can get your Class War on the go. Just download the Stitcher app and look for the Rick Smith Show right there for your entertainment. So, you know, the last month or so, we've been following this thing out in California. This BMW distribution center wanted to fire all their employees, bring in a third-party logistics company, hire, you know, people who knows who, and do away with all these people. Well, these 68 folks, they're represented by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. And they said, well, you know what? We've got something to say about that. And they went out into the public. They went to people in Congress and they said, you know what? We need some help. Well, I got a press release today. It's not a massive win, but it's a win. It looks like a 6-month stay. They're going to keep negotiating, and I'm hopeful. That's why I've asked Bob Lennox, Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 495 out in California, to come talk to us. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Yes. Good evening, Rick.
Congratulations. I guess congratulations to this point. I understand it's only a 6-month extension, but hey. It's 6 months longer than anybody else without a union would have gotten.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, our people were so relieved. They were looking at being kicked to the curb on August 31st, and 6 months meant a lot to them. But more meaningful than that, for our in conjunction with that, we had a really positive dialogue with the company. And it was very open, very frank, but it was very positive. And I remain guardedly optimistic that we're going to be able to work through this and keep these jobs.
Even if it means that the BMW does turn to a third-party logistics company, maybe it has some language in there, and I don't know if this is possible or not, that the third-party company has to take the contract and the people with it.
Well, I'm not quite prepared to agree to that. But we're open to discussions, and we have some ideas that we're going to explore and float to the company about some possible solutions short of a third-party operator.
That's the most preferable, that they dump that whole third-party option. Because, right. As I was reading through this story and as we've talked to you in the past, the folks that have worked there, 20, 30-year employees, folks who have given their life to this company.
Absolutely. And it took a lot to get to this point because as of even 24 hours ago, these people were going to be terminated, period. So we've been able to reach out to not only across the United States, but our international union. I have to tell you, our General President Hoffa, he made a complete and full commitment to support these people. And you think about this, here's 65 Teamster members in a warehouse out in California. And, the trade union movement is struggling with major battles and across various industries with giant employers and giant groups of workers. And to think that an organization of our size, 1.4 million members, would go to this length to protect these jobs, I think that was just a powerful statement. And it really shows what solidarity and unity means. It shows that we can't fight the old fight the way we always did in the past. There's no more of this going out in front of the plant and marching around and cursing and that type of thing. Well, you have to think globally now. These companies are global. If you want a solution to your problem, you have to go global also. We have a tremendous amount of support from Unite in England, which is the equivalent of the UAW here, and port workers in 10 different countries had protests over the past several days, everywhere from Bremen, Germany, to Belgium, Rotterdam, Southampton in the UK, Australia, Thailand, South Africa, Mexico, Jersey City. And, in fact, the day we were meeting, just after the meeting, I got a letter of strong support from the Longshore Union right here in California, Port Panini, where all the BMW cars come in on the West Coast. So, we're hopeful that we're going to be able to resolve this. I feel optimistic that we will. If we don't, we still have significant plans in place. We've been talking to our allies in various countries. They're with us, and they're going to stand by and monitor this. So, and as we proceed in the coming months, we're going to keep them fully informed. So in the event we have to fire this thing back up, we're not starting from scratch.
Right. In response to what you said about President Hoffa, I was a Teamster for 21 years. I think it's ingrained in all members that every member matters from the top down. It's all of us in this together. That's why I'm not surprised that the general president would have taken time to help 68 members out in California because they all matter.
Right. Yeah, and I wasn't that I was surprised. It was such a powerful thing to see it unfold, and they dedicated their strategic campaign department to this effort, and we had their 1,000% support. They coordinated our overseas outreach and had tremendous assistance from them here in the U.S. also, as well as our joint councils and our local unions across the country. Many, many, many of them adopted dealers and gave up their weekends and went out and and build dealerships. I mean, there were so many moving parts to the campaign. It was really awesome to watch it unfold. And, that's what it takes to win these kind of battles against these multinationals now.
Yeah, absolutely good stuff. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Bob Lennox, Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 495 out in California. The website that they're pushing is bmwultimatemisery.com. We've got a link at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Bob Lennox's name. You know, you were talking about, you know, having the dealings you've had with other unions in other countries. And are you seeing that workers in these other countries are getting that if American workers go down, that we're actually going to pull them down with us? As we, you know, as their companies are allowed to exploit our workers?
Oh, we're definitely heading in that direction, especially through the International Transport Foundation. They're an umbrella group, a global group, and they helped put together this entire port campaign. We had multi-cities, multi-countries. In fact, we had protests and demonstrations at 10 ports in 9 countries just in the last several days. Photos are up on our Ultimate Misery website of all of this. In fact, even in Bremen, Germany, there were, looked like there were about 50 people out there, and they were standing in front of a ship that looked like it was going to unload. I'm sure it must have been just loaded, full of BMW cars. That's a pretty powerful visual to think that in Germany, in Bremen, Germany, these port workers would stand up with Teamsters half a world away and be willing to stand with us in the event we had a strike.
Because the truth of the matter is we are all in this together. You know, and you look at these trade agreements that we're talking about right now. Again, you know, all of these trade agreements, they don't help you and me. They don't help the working people. They help the investor class.
You're right. You know, and I think there's another story here, Rick. I think your program would be perfect to explore because I think it hasn't, it's gone unnoticed. And I think it's ripe for a media exploration. I think if a good newspaper writer really researched it and dug into it, it's got Pulitzer written all over it to me if it's done right, and that is this quiet outsourcing of American jobs all over the country. This BMW was one example that blew up because, fortunately, we were able to launch an effective campaign.
Yep.
But so many tens of thousands of Americans had their jobs outsourced in the same way. They go quietly, and there's no news coverage. There's nobody knows about it except the families that get thrown out. And it's beyond even the outsourcing. So when you say outsourcing, most people think, oh, that's the jobs are going to Mexico or out of state or they're leaving the country. No, these are jobs being outsourced in the same facilities, within the same communities. And, you know, we have to focus on that and begin a discussion with the public. Because I think you may find a lot of your listeners know people that have had this happen to them that can call in and share their stories. I think this is probably a very large story that's just gone unreported. And if you factor in the temps on top of that, how many jobs that are created nowadays are all temp positions? Our employers don't even want employees. They just want temps. If you put those two together, that's got to be some massive number.
Oh, it absolutely is. And what it points to, Bob, and I've been talking about this for several years, the broken nature of our labor laws and the reason that, you know, when Barack Obama became president, one of the first things I called for him to do was to repair our broken labor laws and make work pay again. You know, this whole idea that, you know, most people are 1099ers where you got independent contract status like the FedEx people. To me, all of this really leading us down to this race to the bottom where people are on their own.
And what are we going to do as a nation and as a society when we don't have people that can, you have no middle class. You don't have people that can buy the cars and the homes and the furniture and the whatever to support the economy. What are even these big corporations going to do when they run their own customers into the ground? Well, Henry Ford had it right way back when. He gave his workers, I believe it was around 1920 or so, he gave them like a $5 a day raise, which was unheard of at the time. And he made the statement, I want my employees to be able to afford the cars that they build. That's smart.
Well, I mean, at the end of it, what we've got is we've got CEOs, we've got these petty dictators who sit in these boardrooms who think that, you know, it's all about their radical self-interest and their short-term pocketing of whatever they can put in their pocket. And we, as a nation, don't have a plan. I mean, you look at China. Say what you want about the Chinese, but they've got a 100-year vision, and it's to kill us.
Yeah, we're helping them.
Now we're just handing it over to
them. We're helping them lock, stock, and barrel.
But, you know, this getting back to what's going on here at this BMW facility, this, to me, is great news. We're going to continue to follow it. I'm hoping for nothing but the best for your 68 members there. And, again, it doesn't surprise me that the full weight of the union is behind this. And I tell all people, this is the reason you join a labor union. This exactly is the reason.
Absolutely.
Bob, thanks so much. Bob Lennox,
all right, thank you, Rick.
Bob Lennox, Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 495. Again, check out the website, BMWUltimateMisery.com. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Bob Lennox's name. Take you right there. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
Two-year-olds often go running around the house too wildly and crash into something. They get an ouchie and fall down crying, but they learn from it. That's the virtue of ouchie that Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and other big financiers got last year when they ran into the law after racing wildly through home foreclosure paperwork. They were caught falsifying thousands of documents and taking illegal shortcuts that were causing innocent families to lose their homes. They had to pay fines, make restitution, suspend foreclosures, and pledge to clean up their act. But at least they learned their lesson. Oh, wait, these aren't two-year-olds. They are wily bankers. And the only lesson they ever seem to learn is that shortcuts can be profitable, as long as you don't get caught. But, once again, they've been caught rushing through foreclosures, using the same old scam called robo-signing. To foreclose on someone's home, an authorized bank employee must sign the foreclosure document, swearing that the facts in it are true. But that requires hiring people to review each case. To avoid that cost, they take an illegal shortcut by signing the name of someone who has not read the document and might not even exist. In one Massachusetts county, for example, Linda Green's signature has recently appeared on some 1,300 foreclosures. Curiously, her signature was written in many different styles, and she had many different titles. Also, there's no Linda Green presently working in the mortgage banking company involved. Meanwhile, state officials say that robo-signing is, once again, an epidemic all across the country. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's a federal crime to do this, yet no bank or banker has even been charged. We've got to get serious. Until we put a CEO in jail, the banking barons will never learn their lesson.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Exposing GOP hypocrisy, The Rick Smith Show.
What they want. That's what the investor class in this nation wants, and that's what the Republicans want to deliver to their brethren, if you will, the folks who fill their campaign coffers, the folks who pay for their $1,000 a plate fundraisers, the people who pay for the nice gatherings on yachts. I mean, without our billionaire class, and look, the Gingriches of the world will tell you this. You know, without the billionaires, we wouldn't have a yacht industry. You know, who would make the big opulent boats? Who would make the big yachts? So one guy can have a 500-foot yacht this way. You've got folks who don't even have a cardboard box to sleep in. I'll tell you. Anyway, the Borowitz Report, again, you know, with Labor Day coming up, Borowitz comes out with this. He says, in a phenomenon that occurs every year in the weeks before Labor Day, national columnists across the nation file pointless, content-free filler columns enabling the lazy scribes to hit the beach early, according to observers who have followed this trend. The filler columns are churned out in a matter of minutes with no loftier goal than meeting a deadline and filling up space. Meaning that columnists will often resort to using the same words or phrases again and again and again and again and again. And rather than doing any original writing, the slothful columnists will rely on so-called experts to supply them with quotes to fill up space. Experts say. They'll often quote people you've never heard of, according to Harold Crimmins, an expert in the field of filler columns. He says it's pretty shameful. The typical filler column is often a reprint of a previously published column, but the writer will later plug in one cursory reference to current events such as Standards and Poor credit downgrade to disguise this fact. Borowitz goes on to say, in order to fill up space even faster, Crimmins says, the lazy beach-bound columnists will compromise his summer filler columns with short paragraphs. Many of these paragraphs will be as short as one sentence, he says, or shorter, he adds. There are other telltale signs a reader can look for in order to determine whether a writer has, in fact, filled the so-called filler column, according to Crimmins. One of these is a tendency to repeat the information that the reader has already read earlier in the article with columns. Columnists even stooping to using the same quote twice. They'll often quote people you've never heard of, Crimmins says. Another tip that the column ends abruptly. So again, you know, we're coming to the big holiday, and that's generally what happens. You see a lot of this fluff in the newspaper because not a lot of the big news days. So look forward to that. Interesting piece of work by our friend Mark Price over at the Third and State blog. And what's going on here in Pennsylvania? And really, you see these fudging the numbers things happen all the time. But they like to say that the natural gas industry, the drillers, have created 72,000 jobs. In fact, Bloomberg News wrote, in Pennsylvania, natural gas and related industries have created 72,000 jobs. They have 3,143 well permits and more than $1 billion in tax revenue since 2009, according to the Trade Association. And Mark Price points out, look, 72,000 is the number of new hires. So what Price did is he said, okay, you want to play that game? We can play it too. He said that Pennsylvania, you know, like Rick Perry down in Texas, Pennsylvania has, you know, recorded a record 2.8 million new hires during the same period that the natural gas industry hired 72,000 people. The only problem is those 2.8 million new hires only really equated to 85,467 jobs. And you go, well, how can that be? Again, it's how you calculate things. If a fast food joint has a constant turnover, and every day they're rehiring people, you hire 10 people a day for 10 jobs. At the end of the week, you've hired 70 people for those 10 jobs. So you can say we've hired 70 people, which is how they come up with the 72,000 number. The reality is they have not come anywhere near the 72,000 number. But again, it's this whole, you know, we need eye-popping numbers. We need inflated facts. When the reality is, the actual jobs created because of the drillers, you know, somewhere around 8,000 to 10,000 at the most. But, you know, 72,000 new hires sounds so much better, doesn't it, Jake? I mean, then we created 8,000 jobs. 72,000 new hires sounds amazing. You know, we actually did something. And I guess, you know, the reality is that's a lot of shuffling paper.
Well, yeah. It's a nice shell game, but I'd like to know at the end of the day, even though they're playing games, I'd like to know the percentage of those people that were hired that are really from Pennsylvania.
And there's the other, and in there lies the other part.
Therein lies the real gut of the issue. I think this industry is really playing games with the people of Pennsylvania and the taxpayers. I think the promise is that if we leave them alone, and this is the message from the Corbett administration, if we don't tax them excessively and leave them alone, they're going to create all kinds of jobs and they're going to be Pennsylvanians. Well, I don't think asking them to pay their fair share is excessive taxation, but beyond that, I don't know that they're creating a lot of jobs for Pennsylvanians. From the information we're getting, a lot of those jobs are still being filled by people from out of state. So what is the truth here? It would be interesting to find out.
And you know, the Republican idea, and again, here you got Corbett, who, you know, they're taking credit, 72,000 new hires, even though it's really only, you know, about 8,000 or 9,000 jobs, 10 at the most. They're claiming all this wonderful thing, and the Republicans are saying, well, we got a grand plan. We're going to do what Pennsylvania did. We're not going to tax anybody. We're going to deregulate. We're going to privatize. Not working. And in fact, tonight during the big debate, when the T-Twizzlers, you know, what's her name, Snow White and the other seven dwarfs had their little discussion, it was the ninth question. Jobs was the ninth question. What do you do about jobs? Number nine. So, you know, when you talk about priorities, you know, jobs, wouldn't that be right there at the top? Because after all, and I've got it, you know, I've got my pledge somewhere. I got it right here on my desk. There's the pledge to America right there. Jobs, jobs, jobs. 1, 2, 3. In fact, Boehner said it himself a number of times. Top three things I'm going to do. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Evidently, presidential candidates, Republicans, 2012, jobs, ninth on the list. Because that was the ninth question, all the way down. I'm kind of wondering about that. Because their plan, again, you know, you can talk about their plan. Their plan is, let's do the same thing we've been doing for the last 30 years. Deregulate, cut taxes, and privatize. And as we've seen, hasn't worked. Hasn't worked at all. We've gotten, 9.2% unemployment? Because you followed that neoliberal Reagan-esque, that whole free market ideology that, you know, if we just give them all they want. If we just, you know, have no control over the economy, we just let the reins go and let the horses go where they will, that eventually we're all going to do better. And, you know, I go back to that study that, you know, we all know rich people don't give a rat's behind about us. We know that. We know that the politicians really are kind of out of touch and they don't really care about what we have to say. I think Romney proved that today. Somebody in the crowd said, but you're here to listen. And he goes, no, I'm not. I'm here to speak. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, there you go. So they really don't care. I'd like to shake hands with Romney to see if his hands are as soft as Obama's.
I don't know, but you missed a comment. I saw the whole thing. And the last comment by the protester was, well, you know, He wasn't a protester.
Well, he was a guy sitting there listening to a potential presidential candidate.
Call him what you want.
No. That's a frame that the mainstream media has put into
He was someone there.
He was a guy. He was a citizen who decided that he wanted to go here. Somebody who was a possible. No, I think you're missing the point here.
No, you didn't even know what I was about to say.
You called the guy a protester. He's a guy who wanted to hear the next possible president answer a question. But you, are you that recalcitrant that you're not going to listen to common sense?
Well, here's what the point is. This is what he said, and this is the reason I raised the point, Rick. He said, I'm on Social Security, I'm on Medicare, what are you going to do about it? And Romney's reply was, well, I can tell you one thing I'm not going to do is raise taxes.
Right.
And what's your point? What's your point, Governor? What is your point? The man asked you a pointed question, and you evaded the issue, and what did you do? You went to talking points so that the right wing would be pleased with your answer. And those kind of answers are not going to make you president.
I absolutely agree. We are in 100% agreement on that point. But to frame it as that guy was a protester, I got to take issue with that. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. He's a guy who has an honest question and a serious question that every person in this nation needs to get an answer to. And you're right. Romney answered it with a talking point.
I agree with your assumption that he was just...
Not an assumption.
He was there.
He was a guy.
He was there, someone attending a rally. He was protesting in the sense he was protesting Romney's position. You can call what you
want.
He
wasn't protesting. He answered. Well, he asked a question.
He was a man there that had how about if we say he was a man there that had disagreements with Romney?
No, he was a man who asked a question. I mean, what you're doing is the same thing that Fox News did.
This is a Fox News election alert.
Election alert.
On the campaign trail in advance of tonight's big debate, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here. We now have our hands on the tape of an altercation between Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney and what we are told is a group of liberal activists in Iowa.
You know, that guy, the Social Security recipient, are we now going to label him a liberal activist? No, he's a guy who had an honest question. And that's my point. That's the end of it. We're going to take a quick break. Back with Justin Duckham, Talk Radio News Service. Right back after this.
America for the better.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make it, we make it.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
I got news for you.
To the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com now to find out what's going on in Iowa. Our good friend Justin Duckham, Talk Radio News Service. Justin, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how are you doing?
I'm good. How's Iowa?
Iowa is interesting. It is my first time here. It is very flat, but I'm having a great time. Weather is wonderful.
You know, I happened to be watching Fox News, and this thing came on. I got to play this clip. It popped. Just listen to this. It's amazing.
This is a Fox News election alert. Drama on the campaign trail in advance of tonight's big debate, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here. We now have our hands on the tape of an altercation between Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney and what we are told is a group of liberal activists in Iowa.
Did the liberal activists snatch Mitt Romney? What was the altercation? Did they beat him with a flashlight? What was the altercation? Did you see an altercation?
It appears that they asked him a question for something that was supposed to be a listening tour of the state. Apparently that was not to Romney's liking, and he instructed them to wait and finish for him, or to wait and listen to him finish.
This is why I love fake news on Fox. They have made what was a question, and a bunch of people asking questions on, you know, why he's against raising taxes on people like him who have done very well while they're struggling, and that is now an altercation, I guess. It's amazing to me.
And it looks like there's going to be two sound bites that are going to come out of that conversation. On one hand, he said that he is not going to raise taxes in sort of a powerful George Bush-like moment, but he also remarked that corporations are people. And that is something that is probably going to get him, you know, some bad press from the DNC and other Democratic activists who are going to make that a key soundbite of the 2012 campaign.
But
corporations are people, my friend.
Of course. Duh. And I think, to be honest, from a political standpoint, not just from parties, but from people like me, that mentality, this corporate personhood, is something that we have to attack beyond everything else. This idea that a legal construct has the exact same rights as a living, breathing human being, I've got a serious problem with. And as a presidential candidate, I think you're right. I think he's going to get hammered over that time and time again, because I'm sorry, ExxonMobil and GE, they shouldn't have the same rights that I have.
And that, of course, comes from the Citizens United ruling. And just going with that mentality, there's another sort of sideshow going on here in Iowa, where Stephen Colbert, the comedian, has been running a number of ads instructing voters to vote for Rick Perry with an A, with the name spelled wrong, and what he is essentially describing as a protest against the big money influence in the post-citizen world.
I was wondering what he was going to do with his big super PACs, and that's actually pretty good. I've been saying that, you know, Rick Perry's Damien Thorne, the guy from the Omen movies, not most people just aren't getting that reference. But we're working on it. We're going to make sure everyone knows that reference at some point.
Mitt Romney looks kind of like Gregory Peck, so we can go from there if we're going to make Damien references.
There you go. So what else went on today? The big debates. Everyone's in Iowa. Any other movement going on there?
Big debate here in Iowa. Sarah Palin is apparently going to be coming to the state fair in a matter of days. She has not yet declared her candidacy, but there is some speculation that she could come out as soon as September 3rd and definitively answer whether or not she is going to be hosting a presidential run.
I think she'll come out of the closet before she comes out saying she's running for president.
That is interesting, and we will have to see if she's going to do it. So far, she seems to still be on the Fox payroll, which is a pretty good indicator that she may not be hosting a run. But, she is somebody who has surprised people before and could, do it again.
As someone in the media, are you going to get a copy of her itinerary, or are you just going to have to guess, like the last bus tour she did, where she'll be?
She has been notoriously behind the track. During that Rolling Thunder rally, I ended up just kind of chasing her around D.C. and not getting quite a definitive look at her, and it looks like it could be the same thing here. I am sure, though, a lot of people are going to be staking out the state fair around the clock, hoping to get a glimpse. And any time you have reporters doing that, you have to be doing something right.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm hoping at some point in the very near future, people in the media go, you know what, we just don't care anymore.
I don't know. I mean, she's a gift that keeps on giving, so I don't see that happening anytime soon.
A chronic gaffe machine. Yeah, well, how about our Michelle Bachmann? Is she in the Iowa area today?
Yes, she is. She has been campaigning heavily here, and tonight she, was at the debate. And she is also going to be involved in the straw poll. And that is going to be a pretty big indicator about how she is going to do for the rest of the campaign. If she underperforms here, then it's going to be certainly a destabilizing factor for her. But this looks like something that she's going to be able to pull off.
I'm hoping Michelle Bachmann sticks around for a long time so I can use my theme music for her. You like my theme music for Michelle Bachmann?
I like that. Very good.
It's the psycho music. Here's the thing. I think what's going to happen, I think on Saturday when Perry announces his candidacy, that's pretty much going to suck a lot of the air out of there, because I think Perry, to me, I think he's the guy to beat.
And that is something that none of the Republican officials here in Iowa are very happy about. They are frustrated that the Perry announcement could overshadow the straw poll results and could, in fact, delegitimize their process, which is something that they take great pride in, not just because it, brings it highlights attention of your issues, but it also brings in a lot of outsiders into their town.
How long are you going to be in Iowa?
I'm not sure how long I'm going to be here for. I will likely be leaving at some point Friday night or early Saturday.
Well, we'd love to hear back from you, hear some more of the details from Iowa. I'm hoping for another Romney moment, like today, the whole...
Corporations are people, my friend.
Yep, people. Justin Duncan.
Well, I'll let you know, and I'll also let you know if I get my hands on any fried butter.
There you go. Fried butter. Can't beat that. Justin, thanks so much. I appreciate the time.
Hey, have a good one, Rick.
Justin Duncan, Talk Radio News Service. Now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. A positive story coming out of Harrisburg, of the Patriot News. Some 10,000 state workers covered by the Service Employees International Union Local 668 have ratified a four-year contract reached with Governor Corbett's administration. The contract freezes pay this year. It's followed by general pay and longevity increases over the next 3 years that, when compounded, provide for about 11.24% raises. Along with the pay raises, the contract reduces employees' 13 sick pays to a year. It also increases employees' health care contributions in its final 3 years to 5%. Employees who participate in a wellness program would be eligible for a 2% contribution in that fourth year. Contract also increases the copay for emergency room visits. The state has contracts with 17 unions representing about 60,000 employees expire at the end of June. At last check, four of the larger unions representing more than 90% of the state government unionized workforce had come to an agreement with the administration. That's good news on the labor front for SEIU. With the new contract with the state, I think congratulations are in order. Yesterday, in Hershey, there was a meeting concerning the subject of privatizing state liquor stores. PLCB executives and union leader Wendell Young told the House Liquor Control Committee on Thursday that the proposal would drive up prices, would limit the selection available to consumers, and potentially leave many rural areas without a liquor store close by. PLCB Chief Executive Officer Joe Conte says a standard state store carries nearly 2,500 types of liquors and wines, and that the board maintains stores in rural areas even when they are not profitable as a matter of fairness for consumers. Young said a spot check of stores in neighboring states revealed many charge more for Pennsylvania's top-selling brands and do not carry many of them. That issue is still very contentious, and the proposition of privatizing state liquor stores is very, very much up in the air. Story came out in the AFL-CIO blog. It just shows you how hypocritical some of these anti-Republicans are, anti-government Republicans are. It appears, Rick, that governor of the state of Florida is only paying about $30 a month. Rick Scott, who is a government basher, Tea Party follower, is paying, as I just said, about $30 a month for health care. State taxpayers are covering the rest, yet Scott easily handed over an amazing $73 million when he ran for governor. The governor has laid off thousands of Sunshine State employees. He slashed their benefits. He's turned down most of the federal government's health care money, and he's put extra financial pressure on Florida's retirees and Medicare recipients. Scott and his dependents pay one-fifth what a janitor in the state capitol pay for health care, and less than 3% of what a retired state trooper pays for life insurance coverage. Let me repeat that. A state trooper that is in charge of keeping the residents of Florida safe, this governor pays only about 3% of what that retired state trooper would pay for health care. I guess we can add Scott to the list of anti-government hypocrites who decry public service unless they benefit from it. Last article is something that we've talked about, the Verizon strike. I know, Rick, you've gotten into some of the issues, but I'd like to really kind of get into it a little bit more and have our listeners understand exactly the demands of this company. This is what Verizon wants to do. It has proposed freezing pensions for current workers and eliminating them for future workers. They proposed allowing contracting out and offshoring of more jobs, slashing sick pay, completely gutting health care plans for current and retired workers, and eliminating disability payments for injured workers. All the while, in the last 5 years, they've made a profit of $19.5 billion dollars, as you said, Rick, and they've paid out about $258 million to the top five executives in the last 4 years. Amazing stuff. And if you're interested in helping these people, you can go to the AFL-CIO blog. There you can find the nearest strike location. You can download leaflets. You can actually send a letter to the CEO of Verizon, and you can also use Twitter and send a petition demanding that Verizon drop its outrageous concessionary demands. There's a lot of things you can do. If you're interested, go to the AFLCIO.com blog. Back to you, Rick.
There you go. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
To the Rick Smith Show.
It is believed that a little hard work is good for the soul. If this is true, then the history of child workers in the United States is a soulful tale. The first child laborers landed in Virginia in the year 1619. These immigrant children found slave working conditions and poverty wages in the New World. As the years passed, little changed. The average child worker toiled 16 to 18 hours per day, 6 days a week in factories and textile mills. Education was a luxury, and many believed a loss on working children. Charles Harding, president of the Merchants Woolen Company, stated, "There is such a thing as too much education for working people sometimes. I have seen cases where young people are spoiled for labor by too much refinement." Labor unions, consumer groups, and parent coalitions all work to shorten hours, ease conditions, and ultimately end exploitive child abuses. Baby strikes in Paterson, New Jersey, and Allentown, Pennsylvania, demanding 11 and 12-hour workdays, were fought vehemently by mill and factory owners. The Pennsylvania legislature was the first to consider prohibiting child workers in 1833. And consider is all Pennsylvania did until July of 1903, when Mother Jones led the March of the Mill Children from Philadelphia to Oyster Bay, New York, in an attempt to influence President Theodore Roosevelt. In 1836, Massachusetts was the first state to pass a law restricting the use of children in manufacturing. And 102 years later, the United States Supreme Court ruled the Walsh-Healy Act restricting the use of child labor as constitutional. Also in 1938, Congress passed the Fair Labor Standards Act, which put more stringent restrictions on the use of child labor. While hard work teaches discipline, self-reliance, and responsibility, the exploitive nature of our past must remind us that what we have today, we mustn't take for granted, for the days of tomorrow are doomed to repeat if we ignore those lessons hard learned. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show. You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change. And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show.
Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Again, if you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast from the website or on your smartphone, download the Stitcher app, and take it with you on the go. Also, you can email me, Rick, at thericksmithshow.com. So I got this article from Jug, sent it to me at rick@thericksmithshow.com, talking about single payer. And it's one of these things, you know, I've been railing against Max Baucus. And Baucus, I believe, was the guy who denied us single payer. Look, you know, when the folks wanted to get into the room, he had them arrested. And when he found out there were more than he thought, they wanted more cops, completely dead set against it. So when Jug sends me this article about the town of Libby, Montana, who evidently had this mine that caused a whole bunch of people to get sick from asbestos and mesothelioma. They turned to the federal government. And the town of Libby, Montana, evidently covers all the people who are sick there with Medicare. So they've taken the responsibility off of the companies. They've taken the responsibility off of the local community. And really, and good for them, help these folks who are suffering from mesothelioma and asbestosis and put them under Medicare. You know, they're not 65 years old. They don't have to wait till 2014. They don't have to buy into Medicare. It's free for them. They don't have to be disabled before they apply. Any of the other stuff. They don't have to meet income tests. They don't have to have subsidies. They don't have to buy any insurance. They don't have to pay a fine. None of this stuff. And it's right in Baucus's backyard. And I'm saying, you know, if it was good enough for Libby Montana, I think it's good enough for the nation. And if we don't get healthcare under control, and to me, there's very little in the Obama plan as it is that I think is going to solve our problems long term. I'm saying that the Obama plan is a step. It is the first step in a long march toward what I think inevitably has to happen. But what we've got right now is we've got a Republican Party who's hell-bent on destroying it and really turning the country south. The idea then becomes we have a two-class system. And healthcare, as education was at the turn of the 20th century, here in the 21st century, healthcare will be what education was. And look, they're quickly trying to turn education back to the good old days where either you could afford it or you couldn't, which is exactly what's happening with healthcare. Either you can afford the insurance or you can't. And, you know, I look at this idea that they want to keep pushing out that, well, we need to raise the retirement age because, you know what, people are living longer. You know, what about the guy, and I was talking to a kid today, his father works in a steel mill. Has for 40 years, the guy's, you know, 60 years old, his body's broken, he's still got 5 years till Social Security. He can't walk, he can barely stand up, he can't do steel mill work anymore. He's broken, he's beaten, he's in pain, he's suffering. But you know what? He's on his own dime until 65. So you're going to tell me that because people are living longer, that, you know, as an average, we're going to push that to 67 and eventually 69 to where this guy who's worked 40 years of his life, hard physical labor, he's going to have to wait. And in essence, you're sentencing him to a death sentence because he's not going to make it. And I guess, you know, we heard Alan Simpson. I guess that's the plan. The plan is the working people. Look, you know, the investor class, the very well-to-do, they're going to be okay. Trust me. People with access to the health care who are going to have the money in the future, they're going to be treated wonderfully. It's the rest of us. See, Social Security, Medicare, all that stuff is for the rest of us. That's why they want to do away with it. But I just thought that was an interesting story, and I want to thank Jug for that. Again, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com, if you have any stories of interest. A couple of quick things that caught my eye. Evidently, Casey Anthony is the most hated person in America. 94% of the people in the poll said they don't like her. And you know what? For good cause. You know, I don't really like her. Octomom was number three. Somebody named Spencer Pratt from MTV, I have no idea who he is, was number two. And then you jump down the list. OJ, still a very hated person. John Gosselin, Levi Johnston, Jesse James, Paris Hilton, Heidi Fleissend, Howard Stern. And I don't know why Stern's still on the list. He's out of the mainstream. He's on Sirius, you know. I don't know. But there you go, the most hated people in the country. And, you know, I was looking at the poll. 94% of the folks don't like Casey Anthony. I'm expecting her on Sunday to announce that she's running for the Republican nomination for president. Got a whole bunch of other people nobody can stand running for president, so why not her? Here's a great story, and you got to love this sheriff from Oakwood County, Oklahoma. He was investigating a case of he was told that there was a naked woman playing golf. And you know, this goes really much better. He says he's not going to bother investigating. You know, okay, she was there. But you know what? Nobody came in. Nobody made a report. Nobody was unhappy. So he's not going to pursue it. And you know what? You got to love that kind of law enforcement. You know, no harm, no foul, I guess. You know, because who doesn't want to be, you know, in the middle of their golf game and see a naked woman walking by them on the course looking for her ball?
Well, the only problem is if that golf course is the side of a road and you've got car stopping in the middle of the road.
There you go again. Jeez.
There I go again. What effing?
I got to ruin the fantasy. Jeez, man.
Well, that's another good question. How old was that fantasy?
Evidently, she was old enough not to cause any complaints.
Okay. Enough said on that.
There you go. And next, let's imagine you're flying in one of those cramped planes. Evidently, in New York, this 18-year-old kid was flying on a JetBlue flight to New York. And, well, evidently, he had a bit too much to drink. And I'm going, he's 18 years old. How'd he get the booze on the flight? Who served him? Anyway, he was drunk. And he urinated on an 11-year-old girl.
Oh. You're chuckling on that one.
Yeah, well, you know, it is what it is. And I guess this isn't the flight that I would want to be on, because evidently, as this guy is taking a leak on this poor girl, there's another guy who's vomiting and complaining of chest pains. So, again, you know, sometimes when you fly, not the most.
You know, nausea is indicative sometimes of a small heart attack. So, could be some serious things going on.
Thank you, Dr. J.
You're welcome. Yeah. I just read that today.
Yeah. Another one of those emails I deleted. in San Francisco, there's a 98-year-old woman, and this is an interesting story. She's a 10th degree black belt, and she is the last surviving student of the founder of judo. I think that's pretty amazing. And they show her, you know, breaking boards and doing all kind of stuff, 98 years old. I hope to live to 98.
That's funny. Can you imagine her kicking some butt?
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine? You see Granny walking down the street with her purse, and a couple of hoodlums come up,
give her a kick.
She whoops hell out of them, yeah. But she's a 10th degree judo expert. Wow, good for her. Like I said, I hope to live to 98. I doubt I'm going to be jumping around and kicking things, but you know, good for her, man. You know, that's a life well lived. A story from Wilmette, Illinois. Evidently, a guy got into a cab, decided he was going to go for a ride at 2:30 in the morning, and the cab driver pulled over. This kid jumps out, Christopher Porter, 19. Left his bong and his ID in the cab.
Not too smart.
His name and his keys and his bong. The driver turned the bag over to police, who used it to track down the guy.
You know what? Shame on that cabbie. If he knew who he was, why didn't you try to give him a call?
Well, you know, the police said Porter paid the $15 cab fare plus a $5 tip, and the driver declined to press charges. No word on the bong. You gotta wonder.
Possession of a bong isn't illegal? Okay.
It is illegal. No word on the charges. If there's some substance left inside, and so we'll keep a close eye on that. And that's an important story. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, go to thericksmithshow.com, download our podcast. Going back to this super committee, and I hope people will call their congressperson. I hope people will call Casey and Toomey, especially Toomey. Jobs should be first and foremost here. We should be talking about how to create jobs, and I say we do that with our trade deficit. And some of the trade numbers I was talking about are earlier in the program, and I suggest, if you missed it, downloading the podcast, just eye-popping. The trade deficits that we've had with Mexico, the trade deficits we've had with China. You know, in 1985, we had a $6 million trade deficit. $6 million trade deficit with China in 1985. Last year, it was over $273 billion. That is a massive transfer of wealth. Massive transfer of wealth from us to them. And what that means, that equates to working class jobs gone. You know, had we those jobs back? Now, look, I'm not against the Chinese. I want them to grow their economy. I want them to produce and to domestically consume. Absolutely. But you don't steal from us to pay yourself. Just not happening. Anyway, I want to thank everyone who was on the program tonight. Again, check out the RickSmithShow.com. Download the podcast, and you can hear all of our interviews. We'll be back tomorrow night. Big show tomorrow night, so you're not going to want to miss it. We're going to be talking about Verizon and a whole bunch of other things. So have a great night. We'll see you back here tomorrow, 9 to midnight. Have a great night. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the pillar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Hello, are you listening? I was wondering if I